It's the end of the year, and all through the net, money was flying, fortunes were set. But some gaming execs who were told of this bet, they worked to cash in, but pushback was met. This topic is boring, but the news now is light. Ignoring it is detrimental, so we'll discuss it this night. I typed up this intro, reciting it by sight. It's not iambic pentameter, but it gets the job done right. It's time for the show. Orange Lounge Radio begins with your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to talk gaming topics herein.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is another episode of Orange Lounge Radio live tonight, episode number 897 of our show for this December the 26th of 2021. My name is Rob Roberts, and I'm joined by my co-host. First off, I want to give a special shout out to our voiceover guy, Jason, for that intro tonight. He deserves a Grammy for that, just saying. But also say hello to my co-hosts, who probably also deserve a Grammy, because what does a Grammy really mean anyway? Say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
I could use a Grammy something.
Hey, do you know what today is, Dark Sakura?
Boxing Day.
It is Boxing Day, but it's also, more importantly, my half birthday. So happy half birthday to me. So there you go. I'm 43 and a half today. So that's like, what, 4312. It kind of sounds like it's like an Intellivision release date that they're going to miss or something like that. I don't know. Just the numerology thing. So there you go. Birthdays, aren't they fun? Say hello to Forever Young Techmaster Loki also joining us.
Well, you know, I don't know. They can keep making updates. It's kind of like how they predict the end of the world. You know, they'll throw dates out until eventually one of them make it.
Okay, what comes out first? Intellivision Amico or the apocalypse the Mayans predicted? Which first?
Or Trump is reinstated as president, you know.
No, don't ever say that.
They keep throwing out stuff.
That is a banned phrase on the show.
Or that JFK is going to come back or something like that. Like, that was the other one. But yeah, dates are meaningless.
We're going to get into our kickoff topic in a minute. We're doing something a little different for our kickoff topic here. But first, Dark Sakura, we've got to talk about the holiday. I hope everybody out there had a great holiday, whether you celebrate Christmas or not. Because, Dark Sakura, I know you don't really celebrate Christmas, but I don't know.
I
don't
want to put presents. The words in your mouth.
You celebrate Presents Day.
I don't celebrate it as a religious holiday.
I got you. I think there are, you know, there's certainly plenty of people that are like that, but I think there's certainly plenty of people where it's like Christmas is kind of it's about Santa and lights and Frosty the Snowman, but not, you know, that's what it's about for them. So, but anyway, my point is that it's also about getting together with people you like. And so Dark Sakura and I, or sometimes don't like, but in my case, it was people I like. Dark Sakura and I hung out yesterday on the said holiday. And that was fun. So I just want to say thank you, Dark Sakura, and publicly embarrass you for having us over. Because for those that don't follow my Twitter feed, my original Christmas plans with family got screwed up, and I'm not going to get into the details on the show, but there's somebody irresponsible in my family. It's not me. That's all we're going to say. And they managed to screw up Christmas plans. So Alan and I were kind of left without something to do. And so I was like, what's Dark Sakura doing on December 25th? And she was like, come over. Let's have pizza. We'll have fun. Play pinball. Yeah. And it was. We had a good time.
And that happened.
Thank you. Yes. Exactly.
I have to say I was really proud of myself that me in height of lack of medication managed to keep. I only forgot how to say words, I think, three times the entire night.
You were extremely normal last night. So for what it's worth, is that a compliment? It's supposed to be.
Well, it's been really hard. I have to say that unmedicated Jamie is a lot bitchier than medicated Jamie.
Mm-hmm. That's not an in agreement. It's a I understand.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I'm glad I only have like another week to go of this because my test is on the 4th.
You got this.
Yeah.
Just going to some comments in chat because we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. Again, that's twitch.tv/VOG Network, VOG Network. But of course, we're available on demand in many podcast apps. I want to say at the start of the show, Spotify for Christmas, which I know a lot of people use that to listen to podcasts, just added podcast ratings. So for you Spotify peeps, I know some of you are Apple podcast peeps. I know some of you are like Google Play podcast peeps. For you Spotify peeps, do me a favor. Do me a solid. Go in and rate 5 stars for Orange Lounge Radio. Much appreciated. Mwah. Okay, just wanted to get that up at the top of the show. Now to some comments over twitch.tv/VogNetwork. E3VL was suggesting Half-Life 3. What happens first, the Intellivision Amico or Half-Life 3? That was a good one to throw in there. Bobby Blackwolf talking about Christmas saying, I celebrate the secular marketing holiday that is on December 25th. Bingo. Let's see. Sia Tabiri says, Christmas is the day of rest after jingle visits. I believe that is an Animal Crossing reference, right, Jamie?
I still haven't touched the upgrades yet.
Oh, bummer. We got to get into that. Bobby Blackwolf kind of referencing my time spent at Dark Soccer's house yesterday. Rob sent me a picture, and I was like, enjoy your time in pinball heaven. Yes, I wanted to send him a picture of your Mando machine. You probably already sent him one, but I want to send him a picture of your Mando machine because the only other place I've played that table was at Bobby's house. So it was kind of funny that, like, I've never played this game anywhere but at people's houses. One on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. Yeah. Well,
so he has
some type
friend...
of super special table, too. But, yeah, you have that, like, actual Grogu in the table.
Yeah, so Dan's friend who runs CoinOp here in town.
Oh, shit, okay.
He created a mod for The Mandalorian that has an animatronic Grogu in it.
Yeah, it looks good. It's cute.
Exactly. So we, when it came up, you know, Dan just went and bought like the little animatronic figure from Target, and his friend installed it. So now ours moves around and does weird shit and is creepier than ever.
I will say something that Dark Sakura doesn't always represent clearly on this show. I'm going to put it in very clear terms: is how well cared for all of those pinball tables are.
That's,
I mean,
Dan.
Of course. Well, yeah, I mean, that's Mr. Dark Sakura that does a lot of that upkeep. But I still, those machines, and there's many machines in your house. There's like 6 in the garage. You have what,
15?
Another 4 in the office. Then you have like 2 in the living room, 2 in the little side area / dining room.
Now, there's 6 outside, 3 in Dan's office, 2 in the living room, and 3 in the dining area. So that's 13 in the house. We have, I think, 2 loaned out.
Now, I want to be clear. It makes it sound like they live in a hoarder house. It is not that case at all. It's really not. The way they make those pinball machines and fit them in, it actually works. It really, like, you know, especially like in your dining area and the living room, like you fit them in strategical places where, like, oh, this is just, these people love pinball.
It's
and
part
it's
of
awesome.
The decor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
like,
really works.
In the living room is Star Trek and Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside we have the two Jersey Jack ones, which is AC/DC, not mm-hmm. AC/DC. We have Pirates, and we have Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, Dan was telling me about that Pirates and what a score that one is. That's like one out of 150 machines or something.
Yeah, that Pirates one was really. And then we've got we have AC/DC because Dan, I made that happen for Dan thanks to work stocks.
Yeah. but I want to say, wait, before you go on the inventory, like I wanted to say about the actual tables is that the upkeep is done very well. For example, you guys have a Theater of Magic, and you know I'm going to recognize that table as one of my all-time favorites. But the thing
that
about
was a special one too.
Well, the thing about it, when you look at the table, like the box is not all faded like it is on most machines you're going to see at a bowling alley or a bar or whatever, you know, because
oh, yeah.
It's a pretty popular table. Your box is pristine. And the, like there's even like the little chain around the top, which I have never seen intact
that's
on machine.
That's a mod.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
So I have a story about this one.
Okay. Quick.
That's
why I don't want to inventory all the machines because it's a video game show, but
this one has this one's got a special story to it.
Okay.
So it came up at work. We've got, at the time it was like an email mailing list that we had, and now we have a Slack chat for it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the higher up engineers at the company I work for, said, hey, I'm selling a Theater of Magic, you know, I'm in San Jose, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I messaged him, was like, well, what do you want for it? And then I played Messenger with Dan, and we're like, well, let's just make this happen. So we went to San Jose to pick it up. And it was a fully shopped thing. We bought extra plastics. We bought different versions of the box. So we've got all kinds of extra stuff that came with it. And he was really fair about it. But the day that we bought it was our 13th anniversary.
Hmm. Oh,
so cool. On the BIOS, when the game boots up, it says Happy 13th, Dan and Jamie.
Oh, that's so cute. I love that.
And we hung out with Melody. we went and got Melody for this.
There you go. Loki, I don't want to leave you out. I know right now it's probably hard to think about collectibles because the kids are still a little rowdy. They're at that age. But, you know, in 3 or 4 more years, you know, the kids are going to be a little more grown up and probably settled down a little bit. You know, they'll have problems of a different sort, but you don't have to worry about them wrecking pinball tables. Are you thinking about getting into collecting anything additional? I don't know, like pinball tables or anything along those lines, Loki?
I don't have the room in my house for anything.
He wants to collect a new house. I understand.
I need rooms to start collections of things. I already have an arcade cabinet and a broken arcade cabinet. So,
all right. Well, how many years till Josh is 18 and moves out? That's when you get to start collecting.
Yeah, Riley, he's moving out at 18. Jeez. That's very optimistic of you.
All right, fair enough. All right, I try to include Loki in the conversation. It's fine. Anyway. Darksoccer, thanks for having us over yesterday. We had a good time. Oh, I should mention real quick, I know it's a little bit of our gaming weeks, but whatever. It's a holiday show. Y'all know there's hardly any news this week, so we have time for extra shit, okay? You got one of those little, and this has come up on the show before, but you got one of those little mini DDR cabinets that look like, you know, one of the little mini arcade machines, but it's, oh, you have it actually in front of you. Thank you. It's actually, but yeah. It's Dance Dance Revolution. And so I got to check that out a little bit. Super cute. The actual DDR that's in it is a little rough. It's kind of like Game Boy DDR, because what bothered me is that the arrows don't flash to the beat of the music. And for me, that's a crucial part of getting my timing right in DDR, is being able to see the flashing of the arrow. They kind of pulse in an actual DDR machine. But, you know, as far as a mini goes, it's super cute and really cool to be reminiscent.
Can you hear it?
Yes, a little bit.
What songs are in it?
It's
Paranoia, Make It Better, and Keep On Moving.
Nice. Yeah.
And that is literally it.
Yeah, they're all Konami originals, but
of course I'm keeping it in its little box because the artwork on this is classic.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering how long until someone mods one of those things to play.
It's already happened.
What kind of, how do those things, maybe you know Loki or maybe you know Darksoccer because I don't. What's actually powering the emulation in that thing? Or what is that running off of?
The one who modded it actually gutted it and put in like a Raspberry Pi.
That kind of like, mod. Okay.
I think that this can't really take anything extra. I mean, it's dinky. It's 3 entire songs.
Yeah.
Granted, they're in good quality, but the person who also, the mod that we saw, like they modded the lights and everything.
Oh, that's
what
kinda fun.
I wish we had gotten was something like the Pump It Up that they got, where it's like, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell through my webcam, but it's about, of course, twice as wide as that with a widescreen monitor, but it has 2 dance pads on it that come out like controllers.
Oh, that's really cool.
And so you can play along with it.
Yeah. Some comments in chat. YYR in chat says it's not an emulation as far as I know. It's just a newly programmed thing. Yeah, I should have said that. Yeah, because it's not clearly based on any existing version of DDR because it's so part. I would say it's even more parsed back than the Game Boy version. You know what? If they
it's
ever
DD hardly R.
It's more of a DD skirmish, Dance Dance skirmish,
or like DD aren't
dance disagreement,
Dance Dance resolution. Anyway, YYR says it's not an emulation as far as I know. It's just a newly programmed thing. Yeah, it's what DDR would look like on an Atari 2600, but slightly better graphics.
No, it looks better.
It
than
does
that.
Look better than that. Orange Wright.
I mean, it looks good. For its dinky little
screen what it is,
and everything.
For a dinky little $20 thing, it's very clearly a toy that lights up. That's
and it is the basic it is. Steps. It does have, like, both of them are all, like, the basic charts for those
you
3
can
songs.
Go into that little gear thing on the very beginning, and you can put it in another and Master and Maniac. So you can play them in the harder songs modes, too.
But I'm saying just when you pick it up and play it.
Oh, okay.
They're all like the step charts.
Got it. Oh yeah, the actuals. Yeah, for sure.
And the little graphic on it is great. It looks like just, it doesn't have anyone dancing on it or anything, you know, but it is like classic DDR.
Yeah. So, all right. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, so a lot of these games, more likely old TV games, actually use an NES chip. A lot of the TV games in the 2000 and 2010s are actually just running NES on a chips. So I don't think it's even an NES thing in those. I think it's even parsed back than that. But, you know, it gets the job done. I think the cutest part is watching the little dance pad light up and things like that. I mean, this is no substitute for digging out your PlayStation and popping in Dance Dance Revolution third mix. It's no substitute for that. It's just an, isn't that cute? Look how far it's come. Isn't that game old now? All right.
I need to make little figures. Like, I wonder if my little bodycoon figures are the right size to stand on it.
Maybe.
I have, they're like yay big. They're like 1/12 figures,
mm-hmm.
that I use for art references when I draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if they would, if not, I could probably make one, but I think it would be, we talked about that last night with the little mini arcades that I have. Cause I have those other ones. I have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pinball one.
Mm-hmm.
And the Galaga tabletop, not mm-hmm. not the tabletop, but the table mini arcade.
Yeah, one of those little one-ups. Yeah, now you have me knowing I need to go check the clearance inventories at places like
Ross
and probably if they have it there, then probably Home Goods, Big Lots, like all those
actually,
like bargain
the Galaga
basement stores.
Was at TJ Maxx, and I have looked. I've not seen another, but I swear I will scour, and if I find them, I'll pick you up one.
Appreciate it. Well, message me first, because we need the space for it, but yes. All right.
Okay. Let's put it on the table.
All right. Let's get into our kickoff topic tonight. Something a little different. So obviously we've been talking a little bit about the holidays. It's a holiday week. A lot of people are off work this week. The December 25th Christmas holiday is a big time for, you know, all of the games that were created throughout the year. They get released before the holiday. So what I'm saying is that the gaming journalism and gaming media kind of dies down this week and this time of year, right? Because there's just not as much going on in the industry while people enjoy time off. And, you know, while most of the big, big titles for the year have been released, things will start to pick up again in mid-January because it's a lot better than it used to be, because now we actually have game releases in January, because somewhere along the line people figured out, oh, well, people have those gift cards. And it's also more the, oh, we've got to get our games out by the end of the fiscal year because that's far more important. But anyway, this is a slower week. So what ends up happening across gaming media is that we end up with fluff pieces. What I mean by that is, clearly somebody wrote an evergreen type of article, or, you know, somewhat timely for the holidays. They wrote it 2 weeks ago, so it could be set to auto-publish while they're off for the holidays, because whereas, you know, there might not be as much news in gaming media, they still need those clicks coming in on the website, right? They need those ad impressions and all that good stuff, right? So I thought here we could do something a little new for Orange Lounge Radio. We haven't done this before, but I thought we would travel around the gaming journalism sites and take a look at some of their fluff pieces and give our own spin on it. Because that's what we usually do with the news, right? Is we kind of give our own spin and talk about it. And we invite you guys in chat as well to go along with this as well. Fifth Dream in chat says, the best 21 games of 2021 for every console. Yes, much like that. Except I actually don't have any of those game of the year type lists. Yeah, I was going to say top list, but I think there is one actually. So there's no game of the year type of list yet though. So let's do it. Let's go around the headlines and give our takes on some things. So let's start with this first one. Okay, this first, oops, not that one. That's a picture of Bobby Blackwolf because I forgot to change the Safari grab here. Let's try that again. Okay, the first headline... Our first headline was Bobby Blackwell. Okay. So this first headline is from Kotaku, and it's called, You Have Died of Dysentery, 50 Years of Traveling the Oregon Trail. And so this article is really just kind of talking about the fact that the Oregon Trail, it is a pretty old game. The Oregon Trail recently celebrated its 50th birthday, and they're actually talking about that this is the first franchise to go for half a century. Originally, the Oregon Trail was going to be a board game, which I think is kind of interesting.
I have the card game version.
I don't know about you guys, but like the Oregon Trail has had a huge impact on my life. And my formative years. What about you guys? What was the, like, do you remember the Oregon Trail? Was it an impact on you? I feel like for a lot of people that are around our age, it is, because I remember, and I think I've brought this up on the show before, but I'll repeat myself because I do that sometimes. All of us are kind of in that cusp between being a Gen X and being a millennial. I think technically Dark Soccer and I are Gen X. Loki, are you like the first year of millennial, or are you like 80. The youngest Gen X?
I don't know what that means.
I think 81. I think 81 is millennial. So then we're all Gen X. But we do all fall in an interesting sort of what they were calling. Do you remember Zillennial or X-E-N?
Zennial.
Zennial. But another name for this was the Oregon Trail generation, and people that
really?
Were.
Really? Who said that?
I saw it in an article.
That is the literal
social
first
media.
I have ever heard of that.
Go Google it. It's probably come up in a search or something. But I saw like an article thing. There was another name for it too, but I forget it because the Oregon Trail one jumped out in my mind. But I just know the game was huge in my formative years. But what about you guys in your memory or lack thereof?
I never played Oregon Trail as a child.
Really?
Honestly.
Did you ever play it after?
Yeah.
Okay.
But never as a child.
Interesting.
It was always Carmen Sandiego.
Okay. So there were, okay, but there's still something then. Okay. But it was just Carmen Sandiego.
Well, and keep in mind, I was in Alabama. We had a Mac for a hot minute in 1980 something. And then, like, we had an Apple IIe somewhere in my high school. Somewhere. I didn't have regular use with a computer other than having a Coleco Atom where none of my games worked, mind, because they got erased because Coleco was stupid with how they built the machine. You'd get a nice thunderstorm. All of your cassettes were erased. Done with that.
Mike Deft in chat says, I think the Oregon Trail is a U.S. only thing. Probably. But I think Dark Soccer is also bringing up that perhaps it's only in the cultures and the parts of America that had computer labs. Where that was like, but I remember like at my school, we had a room with like 15 Apple IIe's, but it wasn't like your normal, it was the, you got to go spend an hour in the computer lab today, and Mrs. X's class got to go at 1 o'clock, and Mrs. Y's class got to go at 2 o'clock and play computer games. And the Oregon Trail was one of the huge ones. And everybody wrote.
Anything like that.
Oh, wow. No. Loki, did you have any memories, or was it just me?
No, I had we had computer class that we would go to, and we'd play the Oregon Trail in Carmen Sandiego. That was pretty much it. Oh, and I think maybe we also did, what was it, Logo Writer?
Oh, yeah, Logo, learning that language.
Now, keep in mind, when the Mac came out, I was 10. I was already older than you would have been when things like a computer lab in a school would have been more commonplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I would say still, it's not that far.
And
it's
you're in California.
Difference. Yeah, the California thing, yes. I will say that is probably a big difference there. Yeah, for sure.
I never had anything like that. I only had friends with computers.
Well, okay, so the question I also had with this to really kind of ask was, what were the important edutainment games of your formative years, if any? So, Dark Soccer, you did bring up Carmen Sandiego. Even if it wasn't in a computer lab at school, you were playing that at friends' houses. Was there anything else that you remember, like, edutainment-wise, that really resonated
with
you?
Where in Time was my big one. Where in Time was Carmen Sandiego.
Uh-huh.
Because me, I'm kind of a history nerd. I've always been a bit of a history nerd.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, really my thing. The only other stuff that we did, like, I played a lot of, I'm going to throw this in there because it kind of was in there, but a lot of Cryptoquip on the Odyssey 2. Just all those word scramble ones, and we would just make them big and crazy to do that. And I was pretty good at doing the unscrambles like that. Quiz games were a lot of, like, history quizzes.
Uh-huh.
I was always really good at those, too. Like, there were a couple that we had on an Apple IIe that they were pretty out of date, but, you know, trivia is trivia. And
those quiz games were the only games I could get my mom to play with me on Commodore 64. Is that, and our favorite was Family Feud, and I would load it up and she would just tell me the answers to type in, because with my mother, you would think if she touched a keyboard, she'd melt. She was that computer adverse. But she was like, I'll give you the answers. And, you know, so it would come up, I'd read the question, and she'd tell me what the answers she thinks are. And that's how we played games. But that was a fun way to do it. So,
well, I'll put it this way. My elementary school had a Mac before they had an Apple II.
Interesting.
All even right. though it was the newer thing, like when they came out, they got one. One.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat is sharing a similar story, saying, we would have an Apple II, one for the entire grade. The computer would move to different classrooms in a cart. Since I had computers at home, I never used the one at school. I was also a Commodore kid, and the Apple II just didn't appeal to me. I was a Commodore kid, too, but I loved them all. Like, in fact, actually, when I got to see an Apple II or like a TI-99/4A or one of the...
We had a TI-99/4A.
Yeah, see, I enjoyed getting to do the stuff I didn't have at home. So that was always
so basic,
kind of interesting for me.
Basic programming was kind of where what my, I guess, edutainment was as a kid, mm-hmm. was programming the damn bouncing ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Or you California people are fucking spoiled.
Maybe a little. Well, then, Loki, let's talk to another fucking spoiled California person. What were your edutainment highlights when you were younger?
It was just, like I said, the Oregon Trail and... Where in the World Was Carmen Sandiego? I think we had Where in Time as well, but I don't remember that too much.
Yeah, I don't remember Where in Time as much. I know it existed.
That's all we had in our computer lab. Although the last year, like, so it was weird because I sort of remember this because the last year I was in grade school or elementary school, I should say, they had like a computer in the classroom, and I remember it was different than the other ones because the other computers were kind of like either the monochrome green stuff. There, I think later on there was some that were more like kind of VGA graphics type things. But this last one, though, it was about how to use a mouse, because prior to that, we had never used a mouse before. That was like a brand new thing. So we had like a game or something. I don't even remember what it was that we learned how to use the mouse.
Probably, so I remember a big one on the Macs was it Crystal Quest? I think was the name of the game, because they remade it for Xbox Arcade in the early days of Xbox Arcade. I think it was called Crystal Quest, and you collect all these little crystals with the mouse, and that's like how you could learn the mouse. And then you have to get out the exit, and then it would make the strangest, oddly sexual noise when you would just get like you know, you got all the crystals, and then you escape, and it goes. Like when you get out, it's so, well, yeah, it does. I don't play the game. Somebody, okay, thank you. Orange Right knows what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not like making this up. I'm not, but like Crystal Quest is how you learn to do the Mac, and you would collect everything, and then you get escape the level.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't remember that game at all, but I'm trying to think if we had anything else. It was pretty much that in Logo Writer. Like, that was it. Like, we had a pretty basic computer lab. And then after elementary school, actually, no, we did. In junior high, we had, the first year I did, in seventh grade, we did, like, they did this program called the Exploratory 8 or 7 or something like that. And it was basically all the different electives that are available, but you got to do them for, like, 2 to 4 weeks. So you'd bounce to every single one. So it was, like, 7 different electives. And one of them was computers, but it was just computer lab stuff. I think they also did maybe, like, typing as well. But it was pretty much play Oregon Trail. I mean, I don't know.
I'll tell you what was funny, though. When I was in college, now, mind, this was me taking a class in 1995, one of my English classes.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the computer lab. And, well, I'll just put it this way. I played a lot of Doom in black and white.
Mm.
On a black and white Mac. Boxy square Mac Classic.
Good times. You know, I will say, I remember, like, you know, we're right about that age where the tech was changing fast. Because, you know, we're talking about these edutainment games in, you know, elementary school, but kind of like Jamie, now I start to I have these memories when I get to about 12 years old. Those were the years that we were doing Scorched Earth in the science lab, where he did have, he probably had like 7 computers or so in there, but who eats lunch in, you know, the science teacher's classroom? Only the most hardcore nerds. But us hardcore nerds were playing Scorched Earth. His only rule was, do not be looking at anything adult or anything like that. Do not, because the minute you do that, that's the last time you're going to be in here. And we were all well-behaved nerds, so we only did the Scorched Earth thing. And the teacher would kind of look over once in a while and go, kind of give that, huh, interesting look, and then go back to grading papers, you know, just to make sure we weren't looking at porn, you know, that whole type of thing.
I played a lot of Kicks.
Oh, yeah. Kicks. So, that was a classic. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had a study hall for one of my classes. My senior year of high school, my friend Ashley and I did, and we had it in my favorite teacher's classroom, which she's actually one of the few of my high school teachers I stayed in touch with after graduation until she passed away a few years ago. She was almost like another mom to me. That's how I felt at the time. She really was just an absolute sweetheart. She and her spouse at the time owned a store, like a hippie store called the Rainbow Connection.
Oh, that's cute. I like that.
Yeah. But at any rate, she had an old Apple IIe in the storage closet where we would hang out in the big storage closet. And I played a lot of Kicks. A lot of Kicks. So that is me and school and playing a computer.
All right. Well, let's go. This next article, I think, is a little bit kind of tangential a little bit to that. But we're going to travel over to Engadget. So Engadget on their site has an article called Hitting the Books, Amiga and the Birth of 256 Color Gaming. So I have a feeling this is a little bit probably inspired by that recent announcement of the Amiga Mini. But I think they actually also get into a book that was written around that time, Creating Qbert and Other Classic Arcade Games. So this is, you know, again, kind of one of those evergreen articles they can put up anytime. And they talked about how, you know, the Amiga was unprecedented graphics and sound at the time, 4,096 colors, stereo sound, and all this really cool stuff that was with the Amiga. And we never owned an Amiga. We had a Commodore 64, certainly, but we didn't have an Amiga. And I do remember how, you know, the Amiga was like one of those like ultra realistic things, or at least at the time. So the question I have for chat and for my co-host is, what is an early memory when you remember thinking that like computer or console graphics, whatever, were like so real? And, like, your mind was blown. Like, because, you know, I think we've all been there over the years. It's like, oh, graphics are never going to get better than this. Graphics can never get better than this. And then, yet, every console generation, they somehow get better. But I'm sure, like, as an example, you know, the first time I played Super Mario Brothers 2, I was like, oh, this is a cartoon. This is, like, an actual cartoon on TV, but, like, I'm playing it. So what, for you guys, is a moment when computer or console graphics were so real that your mind was blown? Loki, I'll start with you.
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. The very first time, I would say, not necessarily realistic, but like Wolfenstein 3D, I remember seeing that at CompUSA being played, and I thought that was really impressive. As far as like super realistic, maybe like Grand Theft Auto 5 or 4. 5 had a ton of detail in it. I remember that. I can't think of any like super detail. I mean, like, there's so many games out there. It's just like hard to pick one. I mean, but like, I think the earliest one I was like pretty impressed with was probably Wolfenstein 3D, then followed by Quake.
I wanted to kind of bold and underline the Wolfenstein 3D part, though, because, you know, I know that game maybe hasn't held up as well over the years, and a lot of people think about Doom and Quake, kind of like you said. And certainly, yeah, those games were also hugely important, but like Wolfenstein 3D, obviously that whole 3D part is very important because it was really the first time I think any of us played like a fully 3D game like that. Now, granted, people could get technical. You can go back to like the vector-based days and a game like Battlezone or something that was also 3D. The concept of 3D gaming was certainly around beforehand, but there was something about Wolfenstein 3D and the graphics that brought to the table and everything else that was just like,
it was Hexen for me.
Very next level.
Of that era.
Yeah, well, Hexen was awesome because it was the first time we saw it where it's not a gun, you know?
Yeah.
Wolfenstein 3D, bang, bang, Quake, bang. You know, all these games were shooty, shooty, bang, bang, in my favorite phrase. But Hexen kind of put a different twist on it, and that was pretty cool. So
I would actually say Mortal Kombat.
Oh, that's a really good answer.
That's a good one, yeah.
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 What was your what was that like the first time you saw that?
I was like, hey, it's people! And blood. This is great. Sign me up.
I remember the first time I saw a fatality. I was like, what?
That and, you know, we still kind of get the talk, even though now, by statistics, female-oriented gamers are now the majority of gamers.
Sure.
The number of identified female gamers has exceeded male gamers. This is mm-hmm. our market. I'm going to say that now because when I was that age playing Mortal Kombat and getting, oh, girls don't play games. I'm like, fuck you. Watch me kick your ass. That started the fuck you let me kick your ass, you know? And I even remember there was another game that brought it out for me. This is when I was working at Aladdin's Castle mm-hmm. in 1995 in Mobile, Alabama. And my boss, it was when Namco had been buying up like a slew of arcades. They bought Tilt, Aladdin's Castle, all of that. And we were sitting there because we got Tekken 3 like a full year before any of the other arcades did, you know, Namco exclusive, that type
sure.
of thing.
Sure.
And I was going on the internet at my house with my lesbian parents and Barbara, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. And I would look up who the Japanese releases were because they were, you know, after a certain amount of time, they would release a character. We had them in a different order in the U.S. But Anthony, my boss, and I were just standing there looking at him. And he looks over at me as like, you know what? These look like what people look like. You know, the previous games like that, they were blocky and you could see the polygons and this. And he's like, this is really the first time that I've looked at this and had to take a second glance and think, oh my gosh, this looks real.
Yeah.
And I mean, and now look at what we have.
Oh, yeah.
After they've gone past that. But I mean, but at the time, and then the full movement, the motion capture was another big thing. And we were just sitting there talking about like how they did motion capture and how, you know, you could record the movement of a person and incorporate it into a game.
YYR in chat is kind of backing up the same choice there, saying Virtua Fighter 2 and Daytona USA. I was blown away by Model 2's 3D graphics at 60 frames a second. It looked so real. Texture mapping was the way of the future. Yeah. Oh. And I remember those first fighting games were a little bit rough that when they were in 3D, but then like, yeah, as they very quickly evolved into, wow, like very realistic looking things.
Well, and I remember I don't remember how old I was. I was probably like 13 or 14, but it was my first time going to Las Vegas. And it was when the Luxor had the Sega arcade.
Oh, yeah.
It was all Sega owned stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it was a downpour. We were stuck inside. It was either the Luxor or the Excalibur because they had the thing that went between the two.
Yeah.
And playing Daytona on like the multi-person Daytona setup.
So like that 8 or 12?
Huh?
Didn't they have like 8 or 12 machines linked
together? Yeah. They were all strung together on like this big platform. And I'll tell you,
ones with the actual like cars?
Yeah. They're in the little car units. Yeah, it was awesome. But I will go out and say there's another game that did that for me, that gave me that moment, and that was Starblade.
Mm.
And you know I love Starblade. Mm. But it had like the immersive cockpit, if you found like the deluxe ones,
mm-hmm.
that would move around. Space Harrier. You know, if you're in the mm-hmm. and if you had the classic Space Harrier or Afterburner that had the move. There I go with my pop filter. If you had the moving cockpits for them, the hydraulics and everything.
I remember those at the, what was it, Starcade?
Yeah. They had the at Scandia, they had one of the afterburners that moved around until someone broke it.
I want to get to chat answers because you guys have some really good stuff in chat. But since Darksoccer mentioned the arcade, I had to say it because I remember my mind was blown the first time I saw this game. And it wasn't very good. I think it was a Sega thing. I don't remember. But it was the hologram game. Do you remember that? I think it was Time Bandits.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something like that it was called. They had it at the Mine Shaft.
Yeah.
Here in SAC. I remember that. Do you? And that the first time I saw that game, my mind was fucking blown. Like, just yeah. the hologram gaming, because now you actually saw things in that 3D space. And it was a really, like, it was like Dragon's Lair, but clunkier. You know, it did not play very well, but it was just, it was definitely a show-off-y type of thing.
But so, it was the start of that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, anyway, getting to some other comments from chats, because you guys have some great answers in here. Bobby Blackwell says, another leap was Dreamcast and NFL 2K. It looked like a TV broadcast. And Zen Monkey says, yeah, the sports game's always the first ones to demo the new graphics. Really good points, you guys. Fifth Dream says, Dragon's Lair, but it really was a cartoon. Well, it's but still, it was using that technology of a laser disc. Yeah, like, you know, that was impressive tech in the 80s.
In and of itself, Dragon's Lair and those games like that, like even going into Cliff Jumper, which was based off of Lupin the Third Castle of Cagliostro.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the racing one? Cliff? No, it was... I'll remember the name of it because it always makes me think of Bean Bandit. From whatever that anime that I never remember the name is, Riding Bean.
Mm-hmm.
It's really also just very simple programming. You know, it's if this, then this. If this, then not this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really just playing on a path, and you can memorize how to do it, I mean, despite the cues that come up. But the thing that was great about that is because they were starting to realize that people would spectate, like lean over people's shoulder and watch the games.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the first ones that they thought to put another monitor on top of the machine so that people could watch it being played.
And now they do that with some fighting games, especially for like those, you know, heavy tournament things, especially when new ones come out.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Deft is saying the game was called Time Traveler that I was trying to think. I knew it was Time Something.
Yeah,
you?
I remember.
But
remember
a lot of folks in chat remember it. Yeah. I want to get to a couple other answers.
G-Lock, YYR talked about. That was another one.
I want to get to this answer from Mere Muse, because I think this is a great answer from Mere Muse. Well, they're all good, but this one in particular. Says, I remember being blown away by Ninja Gaiden because of the cutscenes. Yeah. It was like a movie. Hell
yeah.
Yes. That was groundbreaking for the NES. You're right. It was like a movie. Okay. How many of y'all were guilty of doing the voices? Since there was no voices, how many of y'all were guilty playing the game with your friend and doing the voices and the cutscenes? Okay, it's just me.
Girl,
that's fine.
I still do that.
That's fine. Yeah. People, yeah, go to different Twitch channels. People still do that.
Have you been watching any of my playthrough of Hot to Full Boyfriend?
Yes, I
I've
have.
Been
I've been
voice acting
lurking.
Everything.
Yes, yes. And Bobby Blackwolf with kind of a winky face answer, honestly, with the Matrix Awakens tech demo. So, I mean, I know that's a little bit tongue in cheek, but at the same time, it just goes to show the boundaries are still being broken. Right. So, you know, and that's a very recent release. All right. I still have like four more of these. So this is a good time filler tonight. But this is our next one here from IGN. Our next topic, and they are running with the headline called Why 2021 Was the Year of the Multiverse. And by the way, why does IGN need these gigantic fucking ads on their site, especially the ones that autoplay? Ah, so annoying. And of course,
because
you know,
their purpose is to make money.
You know, if I turn this off, it's just going to go right back on because it never remembers your saves there. Anyway. So here's the thing. This article is talking about the multiverse. So, you know, IGN kind of talks a bit about more than just gaming. So they talk about MCU, but then they talk about, you know, Star Trek. They talk about the Nickelodeon stuff with, you know, Phineas and Ferb and that whole stuff. They get into all this stuff and the different multiverses here. So I thought a fun little follow-up question to IGN's ad-filled article here would be, what multiverse or crossover games... Since multiverse might be a little difficult, but what multiverse or crossover games do you want to see?
So, I'm already playing one.
Darksoccer, you're playing the fantasy crossover game you've always wanted to see?
I'm playing Dead by Daylight. How fucking cool is that? That I can play, like, famous, you know, horror movie killers. I'm getting Sadako. That makes me so fucking happy if we got, you know... Fair. Kayako and Toshio next from Juwon, I would be even happier.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would love to have an X-Men game done like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm.
I would be over the moon.
I like that.
But that would make me super happy. I miss having a really good X-Men game to play. Mm-hmm. The last one I think I played that wasn't a fighting game was the Sega Genesis one, maybe.
Loki, what about you? Can you think of a multiverse and or crossover game you really want?
To answer Pie Culture real quick.
Yeah.
Which team? It would be a make your own.
All right, Loki.
I mean, I guess Ready Player One would be pretty good. I mean, that was just kind of a crossover of all sorts of things. But that'd be pretty cool.
I guess they never did do like a actual game tie-in game. I mean, I know they did the little Olympics online.
They did like a kind of like a, you know, I don't think it's official, but they did like a Ready Player One VR game that had like some different games within it, but it's not really like the actual game or movie or book or whatever. I just think that'd be pretty cool. Otherwise, you know, something that I'd like to see, I don't know, maybe a Mario Kart game with like characters from other games in it. You know, like not just Mario Kart, Nintendo Kart.
Yeah, you know, and in chat, E3VL has responded to the question saying, you know, basically that the best crossover game is Smash Ultimate. Like, you know, the best crossover game already exists. And I think my answer to this question kind of lies in there, too, is that the Nintendo has kind of shown that they're willing to bleed their franchises over to make an incredible game like that. Let's see that in other genres as well. And I would love to see, because I think everybody remembers the greatness that was Super Mario RPG. And a very easy answer to this would be, we want to see a fucking Super Mario RPG too.
Yes.
But I think the easy answer, and here's where I'm going to go with this, is I want a Nintendo Kingdom Hearts type of thing. That's what I want.
Yes, that would be amazing. And honestly, like, you know, the Super Mario RPG, I would love to have a Super Mario RPG, but the Paper Mario games have actually been pretty good in kind of, you know, that realm.
Filling that void, yeah.
It's sort of, I mean, it's different. The combat's different in each game and stuff, but, like, it's pretty I mean, it's pretty close to that kind of feel of an RPG game.
Right.
But yeah, I would like an actual RPG game. Yeah. It would be pretty awesome.
DJ Rama S in chat says, fuck yes, Mushroom Kingdom Hearts. Tiger Claw with a couple comments here saying, there was that Super Mario crossover fan game that let you play other characters from the NES. Oh, yeah, there was. I think the devs were in Sacramento, actually. Because I remember there was a Kickstarter.
And they tried to kickstart the game with, like, they had to change the characters' names and make them look slightly different.
Yeah, because
they basically
Nintendo's
still had the same thing. And yeah, I don't know whatever happened to that. It just kind of dropped off the face of the earth.
Tiger Claw in chat says, crossover games are kind of all the thing right now. Smash Brothers, Nick All-Star Brawl, and now Multiverse. And then also says there's Fortnite. They do a lot of crossovers. Well, and that's kind of, I think, where IGN was going with the article. You know, even though, yes, it's a fluff piece, I think it is a, you know, an accurate observation is that it's kind of a trend we're seeing. When I'm going to be honest, when I first opened it up, I thought I was going to be reading something about the metaverse because I read too fast. But then when I was reading what was in front of me, I was kind of, okay, you know, yeah, this does seem to be a trend in gaming is, you know, the WB's got something coming with all their stuff. Nickelodeon has their thing. We know the Avengers was a big game recently, and so on and so on. You know, these huge crossover games are kind of a big thing right now.
Gordon Ramsay versus Cooking Mama.
Oh, I love it. And Gordon Ramsay just mines Bitcoin. Dark Tetsuya says, I want a new NES remix, but with other third-party games. Something like that would be awesome. Hell yes on that, Dark Tetsuya. I would love...
What if we...
Nintendo needs to revisit that NES remix concept. I think there was some
good shit there.
What
if Konami brought back Konami YY World?
That might be a little obscure for people, but... hey, Konami's got the Bomberman thing, and they're bringing, like, you know what? You want to talk about multiverse? Like, what? Like, Pyramid Head is in Bomberman, and, like, now they got Suikoden characters in there. Like, Konami's, like, any IP they own, they've put in Bomberman somehow, that's for sure. So, Sia Tabiri says, I would love to see more of a crime-focused Pokemon game like Phoenix Wright cross Pokemon. E3VL points out Detective Pikachu.
Detective Pikachu,
yeah. Kind of a little bit. Maybe a different tone. That might be a different tone, though. So, Anyway. All right. Good answers on that. Let's go to another headline here. The next headline we have is from, what is this site? GameSpot. Who ran an article, and this is really, and look at this, again, another gigantic fucking autoplay ad at the top of the page. Finally, you scroll down, and here's the headline, Free Game Roundup, Happy Holidays, and they talk about games that are free right now, but then they get into stuff that's like Xbox games with gold, and those aren't exactly free, but whatever. It had me thinking about free games. By the way, here's a PSA for those listening live on Sunday night. The Epic Game Store today is giving away Control. And I realize people have their opinions on the Epic Game Store. Some people refuse to touch it. I respect that. That's fine. However, if you are one of the type that's just willing to use it to leech all of the free stuff on Epic's dime, which I am too, go for it and pick up Control, because that is the free game. But it's only, unfortunately, podcast folks. Probably going to be gone by the time the podcast comes around. But, you know, they've been giving away free stuff every day. I just think the big ones are usually like the first game, maybe the last game. And then, like, you know, Christmas Day. And I guess today, because they gave away Prey yesterday. That was a pretty big deal.
Oh, apparently I have the game already. Yeah. They've given it out already.
I think they did give it out at once.
I think I've had it too.
Yeah.
But I have it on Stadia.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, my favorite part of this segment is Rob pointing out the actual reason they're releasing these articles by complaining about it. Oh, the ads? Of course. Of course. I'm on the internet. I'm going to complain about things. That's what we do here. Anyway. So, of course, it was. Yeah. Dr. Suya says Shenmue 3 was free a week ago and like only for a day. Yes. So what question do I have about free games? It's this. Have you ever, this is very much, is Raginator still out there? Because I think this is very much a Raginator-inspired question. So wherever you are, shout out, buddy. Have you ever gotten a game on sale or super cheap that ended up being a hugely pleasant surprise? And by super cheap, that can include free. I'll go first because my answer to this, quite honestly, would be the classic game that Dark Sakura picked last week. VVVVV is absolutely my answer to this because it came in one of those Humble Bundles, and it wasn't something I was necessarily seeking out, but when I bought the Humble Bundle, I noticed like, oh, this is kind of like Commodore 64 inspired. This looks like it might be fun. Obsessed.com with that game. Obsessed. In fact, I kind of want to play it again. Maybe that'll be a stream in the near future. But like, that was a game where I was not expecting that to be as good as it was, and I got it for very, very, very cheap. Maybe not free, but very cheap, like where I felt like I stole it. Loki, anything for you in the I discovered amazing game for free or cheap?
For free or cheap. It's technically it wasn't cheap. I think it was this I can't remember if it was 40 or 20. It may have been 40. But Earth Defense Force 2017. Nice. I think it was pretty cheap, and that was just endless amounts of fun. There was another one I was trying to think of, like, but I'm looking through my Steam library and I can't find it because I have too many games in here. But there was another one through Humble Bundle as well that was really good, but I can't think of the name of it right now.
Well, if you think of it, we'll come back to you. You know, before I kick it over to Dark Soccer with this question, thinking of the types of games Dark Soccer enjoys actually brings another very relevant answer to mind. Dead by Daylight was something I got to play because of Xbox Game Pass. And I knew that Alan played the game and really enjoyed it. And I'd watch stream. He got me into some of this because he would watch these streamers in bed, and I'd just be like, "What are you watching? What are you watching?" And you know, then I think they were very funny, and you know, started to get into watching the streams as well. And then I was like, "I don't know if I could play this game because I'm not big on horror." And then of course, you know, I was like, "Oh, it's actually not that gory at the end of the day. Like it's you know, it's not you know, actually graphically, it's really not that intense of a game. It's really just about you know the different mechanics and that whole thing." But it was because the game was on Xbox Game Pass that I was like, all right, I'll download it and check it out. No harm, no foul. I didn't actually spend money on it because I'm just paying for Game Pass. So that would actually be my other answer. Okay, Loki, quickly yours, and then we'll go back to Dark Sakura.
Until Dawn, Rush of Blood. It was 20 bucks, and that was excellent. It is easily a $60 game.
Good
easily.
Answer.
But yeah, that would be my pick.
Good answer. in the chat room, Tiger Claw says VVV is one of those games that speedrun. Bobby Blackwolf points out every game is speedrun. E3VL says live service online multiplayer games aren't speedrun, though. Actually, I hate to well actually you, but I'm going to well actually you. Those are speedrun as well. In fact, because Shane was telling me about one that he was watching this weekend where somebody was speedrunning the entire main story in Final Fantasy 14 over like 72 hours or something like that. And it was just getting through the thing as fast as possible without, like, you could not chain run dungeons. You actually had to go through the main scenario and do it that way. So people come up with their own wild rules that in turn become a speed run. It's just you have a lot more options with an MMO. Anyway, I'm sorry, Darsakura. What about you and cheap or free discoveries?
I just got Pikuniku, which I've been wanting to play.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a bunch of games that have just come out, you know, free one way or another. Like, when I started WoW, I think I had, like, a free thing for it.
Oh.
And I played, like, after Cataclysm for a while. Dead by Daylight, I don't even remember ever having bought it the first time.
It might have been a Stadia giveaway game at some point, for all I know.
Yeah, I think it was, because at the time, I got all my DLC, like, really dirt cheap. And I have a bunch of great games that I've gotten on Stadia for, quote, free. I have the pro membership.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of really great games that I've picked up that way. I've been wanting to play Control, and I just got Control.
Nice.
But I already had it on Stadia.
Mm-hmm.
There's always, you know, a lot of the ones that pop up on Steam for dirt cheap as well, and then people have bought me games. So I really have a hard time naming one versus the other.
Okay.
Because typically, it'll take, like, I'll pick up a game and I'll be like, okay, this is fun. And then I'll lose interest because mm-hmm. that's just the way my brain works. I won't stick with it. And then I'll find the one and I will stick with it.
Yeah, that's how I play games too.
That's kind of what Dead by Daylight is for me right now. Detroit, actually. I got Detroit pretty cheap.
You know, you brought up World of Warcraft, and it did, and you know, between that and the comment about MMO speedruns in chat, kind of made me think that, like, usually, you know, a lot of those games, like WoW, you know, Final Fantasy 14 does this to the point that it's a meme, has the free trials to kind of get you hooked, and it's like play until level whatever, and then, you know, pay a monthly fee after that. And, you know, WoW has one, Final Fantasy 14 has one. It's suspended
Ragnarok
right
Online.
Now, but they have one. What's that?
Ragnarok Online.
Oh, or just straight up free to play
games.
That
was the one I played for free for a long time.
Fucking Pokemon Go, Ingress, all the cell phone games.
Well, no. Ragnarok Online, I played in the Japanese beta.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the U.S. beta came out. And I played in the U.S. beta. And then they were going to make us start fucking paying for it. And I paid for it. But... And then they were like, oh, well, your beta character isn't coming over. And then a lot of us jumped ship and then free servers happened and all of that. But Ragnarok Online, I played that for a good 10 years consistently. I'm sure, as you recall, I have still a picture of our character sitting in Prontera Field with your little mage wearing a bow.
I had a mask. We were very ahead of our time in that regard.
I would always play the assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a cute little mage.
Yep.
All right. It was adorable.
Just a couple more of these, but I think, I don't know about you guys, I'm having fun. So let's look at a couple more of these. So let's go now over to GamesRadar.com, who's running an article that says, the play team debates which kids' book they would turn into a game. I don't know who the play team is. I'm assuming that's just something in house. Maybe they have a podcast. I don't know. But they're talking about being traumatized by a fairy tale, and they've got it's a magazine. I see. And so on. So, of course, this lends itself to the question. There really isn't much of an article here, is there? Oh, no, I guess it does. You just can't tell because of all the ads. So they go around and somebody says Grimm's Fairy Tale. Somebody talks about the faraway tree. And so on and so on. So, of course, I'm going to ask you guys, what book do you want to see made into a video game? This might be a hard question. Darsakura, I'll start with you.
One of my favorite book series would be the Heralds of Valdemar series by Mercedes Lackey.
Mm.
And I would love that to be made into an RPG where you can play one of the heralds in the main kingdom and have all of their interesting little powers.
Mm-hmm.
And you go around and, you know, rescue people and save and, you know, settle disputes and do all the stuff that they do in the books and go to the different kingdoms and diplomatic missions and all kinds of fun stuff like that. I would be totally down for that.
Loki, how about you?
Children's book. I would
it
say
can be anything. It doesn't have to be children's book.
Okay, yeah, this well, isn't a children's series.
It's either going to be Ready Player One or it's going to be, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I guess. That whole No. The Wizard of Oz would be awesome.
Oh, or like the Greater Oz story. There's so many stories in those books that have not been realized.
I've read so many of them.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. I'm surprised they haven't tried to like MMO that universe. Maybe that would be really hard, though.
I think they might have, if I recall, I think they approached Baum's Estate about it, and there was a big rejection. I have to go back and find that. I remembered reading something.
But yet they made that movie with Lea Michele. Whatever. All right. And like James Franco. There's some Oz movie they did a few years ago.
Oh, The Great and Powerful.
That's
Oz,
it, the Great
and Powerful.
Yeah, that one.
I kind of want to see that, but I All always, right. my favorite that was Return to Oz because it was like right based off of like three of the books.
That movie fucked us all up as children. Like, again,
that movie was great.
That speaks, you know, it's funny because they say we're the Oregon Trail generation. We should be the, what was her name? Princess Nambi? What was her name?
Nambi, yeah.
Nambi.
That should be our, we're the Princess Nambi generation because that bitch scarred us all with her heads in the jars and all that. I'm sorry.
when they start screaming. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Sia Tiberius says Mila Kunis was in that. Not Lea Michele. I thought it was Lea Michele in that. All right, whatever. All right.
But you know who else, though, was in Return to Oz?
Fairuza Balk.
Yep.
Yeah. She was Dorothy.
That was such
before.
A good movie. Yeah, that was a great movie.
My book series, I was going to say R.L. Stine's Goosebumps.
Didn't they do games? I thought they did some games.
They've done, I think they did movies, but I don't think they've done games. Or if they've done games,
there
might have been point-and-click adventure games. Because I was going to say the Babysitter's Club, but I'm pretty sure those have been games.
There's like some point and click.
Okay. Oh, Fifth Dream says they've done games. All right. Fair enough. All right. I tried. All right. One more article. All right. One more. This has been a long save, but this is good. You guys enjoy this as a time filler? All right. Press one in the chat if you enjoy us filling time with the segment. All right. Last story here is from what website is this? Even this thing? Oh, Game Informer. Okay, so we're going to visit Game Informer, and I thought this was an appropriate one for Orange Lounge Radio as we head into our 20th year of broadcasting next year. And remember how it all started? Because Dark Soccer, Loki, and I all met playing Dance Dance Revolution at the local arcade. So of course, this piece on Game Informer about the top 10 music games. Caught my eye. Or should I say top 10 music games to play right now? Play them right now. Well,
that's
folks,
that's gonna be a short list.
I thought well, it's 10, Loki. I thought we could review the list together and give our expert opinion on how well done this list is. So you guys ready? Here we go. So according to Game Informer, and this is in no particular order, Fuser is the first game that they mention. I did like Fuser, but I liked Fuser as a concept more than a game, personally. But I look at it more as like a canvas. It's like an interactive type of thing. So, YYR says, I bet DDR isn't on there. We shall see. We shall see. Fuser is the first one. Rock Band 4. I think that's a pretty solid pick. I think a lot of us are nostalgic for the Rock Band Guitar Hero era right now, which is funny because it's very hard to get those controllers and that sort of stuff. Like, you know, just when all the plastic shit was filling up our house, now we can't find it anywhere. It's just very interesting.
I have them all in my garage.
Good for you hanging on to them. Good for you
hanging
on to them.
Collecting dust.
All right. So Rock Band 4 is on their list. So that's two. Let's see what else is on the list. So we then have Cadence of Hyrule that Sia Tiberi said in chat. So this, of course, is based on Crypt of the NecroDancer, but they did it with Zelda. So this is cute. I like that Nintendo lent a very valuable, like they believed in this enough to lend such a big property to the developers, like indie developers. And I was almost more excited about that than just the fact that it's a solid music game, to be honest. So, All right. Moving on the list, Beat Saber. I mean, I think this is a given. Like, it's like the VR app, basically, is Beat Saber. And now it has Lady Gaga, which just elevates it that much more. So I'm on board with the Beat Saber. The next one on the list, Res Infinite, to which yes. I give a giant fuck yes. This is one of the best music games that will ever be made. And in fact, I'm still kind of salty that Area X, which was very clearly a prototype for a new Res game, was not fully realized. So just
especially
something.
Now with the graphics that, you know, they're pushing on these consoles.
Right. So, yeah, I would absolutely agree with Res Infinite. The next pick on the list is Tetris Effect. So not usually something I think of with music game, but at the same time, yes, it absolutely does qualify, and it is absolutely the best version of Tetris on top of that, for sure. So I definitely, Mizuguchi is huge on the music stuff, obviously, as we see with Res. Tetris Effect is right up there. Funny, and again, I've pointed this out on the show before, but I'll say it again. If you actually look at the credits for Res Area X, it talks about how it's run on the Synestesia engine, which is the exact same engine that runs Tetris Effect if you look in the credits. So those games are connected. Yours forever. All right. Moving on. The next game on their list, Thumper. This is an interesting choice. I get it. I'm not sure it's one of my top 10 favorites of all time, but I do feel like it did bring something very different to the table. With the whole music horror, but they do it in a neat way. Like, it's not just like, oh, symbol hovers over thing, press button. Like, this is a very different way to approach that, and I can applaud it for that. So there is that. Moving on. And Bobby says, this isn't top 10 of all time, but top 10 to play now, which means it's available for modern consoles. Well, you know what? I also, why did you all just throw your retro consoles in the dumpster? Do y'all not have phones? All right. The next item on the list, so here's one that I'm going to say, no, this is wrong. BPM bullets per minute. Alan got this one. We were checking it out a little bit. I think it wears out its welcome pretty quick. I don't think this is that good of a game. Sorry. I know that's kind of mean because I know it's more of an indie game.
I just got that free this month in my Humble Bundle thing.
Well, that's good. It was free.
Well, it wasn't free. I had to pay for it, but, you know, free enough.
I think it's one of those things that sounds cooler than it actually is. So, I don't know. So, there's that. Let's see. The next item on the list, Autica. Is on the list. This was Harmonix's kind of answer to the VR music game space. I think this game is better than people's memories give it credit for, because the conversation is always Beat Saber, Beat Saber, Beat Saber. And yes, Beat Saber is a good game, but that doesn't mean other VR games that are music-based can't exist. And I think Autica is pretty decent. I enjoyed it. They have a lot of good licensed music in it and so forth. So I think Autica is worthy of the list, especially if you are looking at a modern stuff that you can get right now type of list. And then was that it, or is there one more? Oh, there's one more on the list. And again, I think this is a lazy pick. Just Dance 2022 is the last one they have on their list. Maybe this is just my opinion. Just Dance 2022. Again, this list coming from Game Informer. I think that list is, or that particular entry, I think Just Dance is more of an exercise title than it is a music game title. Because yes, it involves music, and hypothetically you're supposed to be doing things in time to the music, but it doesn't really measure you on that. It's really all about the poses, and I really think that game is more of an exercise game than it is a music game, in my opinion. But I realize people have their own opinions. So what music games did they miss? And I, of course, think they miss DDR. And I know Bobby's typing his comment. It's games you're supposed to be able to play now. You can walk in any round one or Dave and Buster's and lots of other places and still play DDR. And I'm just surprised that the granddaddy of music games is not still on that list. So other thoughts, other oversights? What do you guys think of that list?
Theatrhythm.
Ooh, that's an excellent choice. I realize you have to go back a little bit because that was a 3DS game. I think Theatrhythm ought to be revived.
I thought they had newer versions that were like on PlayStation stuff. Like, I thought they had console versions of those.
Theatrhythm? No, it was only on 3DS.
They
have that.
Theatrhythm! I'm kidding.
They have that Kingdom Hearts game. But some people were saying was Theatrhythm's successor, and my answer to that was I hope not. So, I'm actually kind of relieved that Kingdom Hearts game wasn't on this list.
Sayonara Wild Hearts count?
Ooh, that game is so good.
Good pick. Yes, yes, yes. Good pick, Loki. I take off BPM and put that one. Good answer. Good answer. Good answer. Anything else jumping out at you guys? Some folks in chat are talking about. Mike Def
says Dance Rush, but like you know.
Mike Def says Groove Coaster and Taiko no Tatsujin. So I'm all for a new version of Theatrhythm as well. That's for sure. All right. So there you go. Some gaming journalism fluff pieces and our take on them to help us fill the gap in the news this holiday season. Hope you enjoyed that. So maybe we'll do this segment again sometime during a slow news week, because when it's a slow news week for us, it's a slow news week for those ad revenue, those websites that need to show you full screen ads before you can read someone's hot take on what music games you should download. So there you go. And who knows how many of those music games paid to be placed on that list. We'll never know. All right. Let's talk about our gaming weeks and the types of games that we have been playing this week in a segment we call How Was Your Gaming Week? So, Dark Sakura, let's go to you. How was your gaming week?
It was eventful. Of course, I played a good bit of Dead by Daylight, like I do. I've been streaming Hot to Full Boyfriend Holiday Star, which I actually just finished the main story last night. But now I'm doing the side stories. You know, I'm not going to do that tonight. I'm still going to be doing Dead by Daylight tonight. There's been some pinball. There's been that little tiny DDR that I just showed off. And Fantasian. I love Fantasian. It's actually such a good little RPG. I actually have a game I'm looking for.
What's that?
It's called Internal Section. It's kind of a Tempest-like game, but it's got a pretty good soundtrack. And it's a Square game that did not see release in the U.S., and it's one I've been wanting to get my hands on, and now I'm kind of on the hunt for it.
Okay, interesting.
Without me paying $70.
All right. Let's go to Loki. Loki, how was your gaming week?
It's all Minecraft again. I've been just playing a ton of Minecraft. Hours and hours and hours. Just getting ready for like my next episode, actually working on it right now. Earlier today I was filming some stuff, and then I have a build I'm doing for that. So hopefully we'll have that out soon.
All right. And for my gaming week, I would say the bulk of my gaming week, no surprise, is still on the Final Fantasy XIV expansion. But on Christmas Day yesterday, I beat Endwalker. So I am completely through the story. Everything's done. I even now have run the expert dungeons thanks to Free Company and, you know, starting to explore some of the post-game/endgame content. So I will not get into spoilers. Don't worry. However, since I have a lot to say about the story and I have a lot I want to get off my chest about that journey, I thought it would be fun to, just for funsies, get my Final Fantasy buddy Shane, who you've heard on the network before, together to do a spoiler-filled Final Fantasy XIV discussion, and that is going to be Wednesday night here at VOG Network. I think it'll probably be about 5 Pacific, but stay tuned to our Twitter for all the details, at VOG Network, and of course our Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled, and yes, it will be very clearly marked on the stream and all that stuff so that nobody accidentally gets spoiled. We're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about Endwalker and how we felt about it, because I'm sure Shane feels very similarly. We have feelings about some of the story and some of the things there. So we're going to do that a little later this week. I will mention, though, that the journey to getting to beating this game was a little rough, because they put out a patch on Tuesday to address some of these queue issues. The good news is they I don't want to say they fixed the queuing issues, because there is still queues and they are still sometimes thousands of people long. I do feel like they're getting smaller, But I don't know if that's just because of the holiday or what, you know, and people traveling and going other, just having other things to do and what that's all about. But people are no longer erroring out while they're waiting in line. Or at least I'm not hearing about it nearly as much. So that was the biggest issue most people had, was getting kicked out of line after waiting in it for an hour, which can be very frustrating. So I think people are at a better place with the queue, even though Square has a long ways to go to fix the issue. That's not the issue. The issue for me is that a very small few amount of PC players, including myself, and I know I'm not alone because I've seen other people talking about it on Reddit and in Twitter threads, we are having very bad sound issues. It is like sound tearing. The sound will do something like this when you're trying to play the game. Like, it's very like stuttery, and you probably had no idea even what I was trying to say there. And that's what it's feels like when you're trying to play the game. Not like 100% of the time, but when you get into intense action sequences, it does this. Again, a small amount of players are seeing this. The patch on Tuesday was supposed to address these issues, made it worse. Yes, I read Yoshi P's letter and I did everything he said. Didn't change a damn thing. I need them to revert the sound driver back to the last version. Which, you know, and some
people
say...
Is it something that modders might be able to fix, at least?
It's hard because it's an MMO, Loki, but at this point, I feel like that's the only way it's going to get fixed. Yeah, and Zebun Chat says it's not happening to everyone, though. Right, and the problem is that... And this is the reality. If it's not happening to a person, then it's not a problem. So it's really only a problem for me and the minority of players, maybe, I don't know, maybe 1% of PC players, maybe even less than that, who are having these issues. It's a huge problem. And I got to the point on Tuesday or whatever day the patch came out, because it got worse, that I was hovering over the cancel button. Like, I was, and I have, y'all know, I have stanned that game hard since the day it came out. Even 1.0 I played. I was just so, I felt so defeated by the fact that I couldn't even play this thing that I enjoyed. But I realized, oh, dummy, you play for 3 months at a time, so you're paid through February anyway. So what did my stupid ass do? I figured out that the only way I'm going to be able to actually get through the story and not get spoiled any more than I already had been was to buy it on PlayStation 4 and get a PlayStation license, because I knew I wouldn't have the problem on PlayStation. So, I mean, what? It's not like it's the first time I've bought a game on two different consoles, right? So I bought Endwalker on PlayStation 4 and got that license. That's how I beat the game. And I've been playing on keyboard and mouse on PlayStation 4, and it's not the best, but I will take it versus the sound issues I was having where going through dungeons was giving me a headache. Quite honestly. So at least I finally got through the story. I still need them to fix the client. I'm worried if they're ever going to, because again, if the problem isn't there, then people say it doesn't exist. Anyway, so overall, I really enjoyed the expansion. I don't think it's my favorite expansion story-wise. I think it's somewhere in the middle for me. I'll get into the reasons why in the spoiler cast. But I did think it was a good end. And there were, I think for me, there was a lot of peaks and valleys. There were some things that were like, this is better than the game's ever been. This is like the whole last zone up until a point was so, so good. I was like, oh, this is the best this game's ever been. And then you get to valleys and some of the worst that the game's ever been. And I don't have a nice way to say it. And for me, that would be things like, The brilliant idea to add stealth quests into the game that are a little bit moody and temperamental in the way they work. And escort quests, which is, you know, something vanilla WoW had. So those are some things that are a little bit more valid. And then there's some story things I don't want to say right now, but I'll say later. So peaks and valleys for me. But I do think at the end of the day, I think as we get into the patch expansions, the 0.1, the 0.2, and so forth, what is a peak for the game is the technical end of it and the way it plays. All of the jobs, as far as I've seen and heard, they are all in a better place than they've ever been. And every job is really fun to play right now, even Bard, even Monk, you know, and the things that usually were getting shit on previously are all really fun to play right now. And at the end of the day, that is probably more important than the story is the day-to-day, like, actual gameplay really fun? And the answer is yes. So That's, in short, my take on Final Fantasy XIV. Other than that, I've also still been playing quite a bit of Dead by Daylight, especially that day and a half that Final Fantasy and I were fighting. I was trying to get a lot of blood points in Dead by Daylight, and I'm trying to prestige Cheryl slash James again, and I'm just about to prestige 2. So I'm about to get to level 50 again and then prestige Cheryl again. So
I P1'd Doctor.
Did you? Nice.
And I got Adept Trapper.
Oh, cool. Okay. Oh, wow. That's hard to get, those adepts.
I got it the first try.
Congrats. You must have had some survivors that were like, babies.
No.
Really?
It was a really good match.
Good for you. Well, good. That makes it feel even better.
But the thing is that I've talked to 4 other people now who have said that they got it their first try.
Huh. Maybe I need to try it. We'll see.
Go for it. It was easier than I thought. And on top of that, it was on Macmillan's.
All right.
So,
that's really about
it. Doctor was harder.
That's really about it for my gaming week. I'll probably this week we'll probably play some more Final Fantasy XIV. No Man's Sky Expedition 4 is going to be, I think, next week. 3 is happening right now. Alan has already finished it. He didn't even get a chance to stream it. He just put the pedal to the metal on Expedition 3 and already finished it in like 3 days. So that's kind of neat. So I'm really excited to get through Expedition 4 in No Man's Sky. And then Alan and I are talking about playing like a co-op game together with all the rewards from the expeditions. I think that'll be really fun. All right. I know go ahead.
If I may, I also forgot to say to those celebrating it, Happy Kwanzaa today.
Yes, of course. Happy Kwanzaa.
Because that is
Boxing
Day.
But I think you did say Boxing Day at the top of the show. What else? Is there anything else today? I don't know. There's...
Happy me shoving all this stuff in my face day.
Happy cookies. All right. We do have a few news articles to talk about tonight. We don't have as many as we would have on the normal show. That's why we let the kickoff topic take a lot more time tonight. But we do have a few articles to talk about. Definitely this first one, I think we want to do a little bit of a Nelson laugh. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we don't. Loki, why don't you get into this first article tonight?
Yeah, so, hey, you remember those wonderful Ubisoft Quartz, that whole service where they were selling these things called digits, which were basically in-game NFTs? Well, they haven't sold many of them. Looks like roughly they sold 15.
But that's not Ubisoft putting that number out. How did they figure that out, that only 15 have sold? Is that like watching people's wallets? Which I know they can do.
I think they were looking at, so they were looking at, because, you know, with these, they can actually take a look at, you know, because it's on the blockchain, they can take a look at, you know, how many were minted and all that stuff. So they were looking at, I guess, a couple authorized resellers, so Raritable and Object, and kind of looking at, you know, what was selling on those. So, right now, they said there's only a handful of sales that was 94.49 Tezos, which is, like, I guess, $380. But, yeah, not very very many have sold so far, which makes sense because you have to play the game for 600 hours and just, yeah.
So it appears the marketplace is rejecting the NFTs. So... does that mean we're free of them? We're going to be rid of NFTs forever now in gaming? Oh. Somebody's going to try to find that magic formula to make it work, huh?
Exactly. And, of course, there's been, you know, comments regarding, you know, people not liking the NFTs. So coming from Ubisoft's blockchain technical director, Didier Genevis, he was saying that we're doing this anyways, you just need time to get used to it. I'm sorry, that's what it boils down to. That was a paraphrase. What he basically said was, we have received a lot of feedback since the announcement. We hear both the encouragement and the concerns. What encouragement? No one's encouraging you. We understand.
No, there is Loki, to be fair, there is absolutely, because I've seen it and I know people that are in it. And here's the thing, like, I'm not trying to be a total curmudgeon about the NFTs. I'm trying to have an open mind with it. And I see people on social media, but there is absolutely on Twitter, on Facebook, on blog, there is an echo chamber of people gassing each other up that NFTs are the next big thing, whereas the rest of us, and some of you may be involved in it too, and I'm not, again, this is not a personal attack, but I hope you understand that the rest of us are looking in from the outside going, this doesn't make sense. And until, well, here's the thing, I'm sorry, to the NFT bros out there, you have to convince me to get in on this for this to be successful. You can't sit there and say, well, everybody else is an idiot. This is the next big thing. You're a dummy if you don't understand it. Because guess what? That is going to lead to an echo chamber that goes down the drain.
No, I get it. You're basically buying and selling artwork, but it's digital artwork. You don't get any actual, like, sure, you have digital ownership of it. But, like, is this JPEG worth, like, the money that you're seeing it's worth? No, it's not. I'm sorry. And it's not really exclusive. Like, if I bought a painting, sure, I could take a picture of it and you could have a picture of it and you could see the picture of the painting, but it's not a one-to-one exact duplication of it. Whereas if I go on the internet and I have, an NFT image that's out there, I could make a direct copy of it. Oh, and it would cost me nothing.
I have to read this from Dartitsuya in chat because I think this hits the nail on the head. Dartitsuya in our chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, someone on Twitter compared it to the company selling stars from other galaxies, that whole thing from years ago. Oh, they still do that. Absolutely. Sell a star. That is so good.
They already.
That
no,
is such
is
a
exactly,
good explanation.
It is exactly like that because they even have like these quote unquote games that are going on with NFTs. So like they have one where you're basically buying land like on Earth. So it's like I go onto Google Earth, I'm like, I like that piece and I'm gonna buy it as an NFT.
Like E3VL is bringing up the Spider-Man NFTs because a lot of people got them because the No Way Home movie is huge. Tons of people are seeing it. And I guess what was it, the first 100,000 or something got some sort of NFT in their email. And I think a lot of people are going, great. And now people I know and people I watch on Twitter are trying to sell those NFTs on Twitter. I don't know if they're being successful or what, but my question is, okay, so what does it do? Is it just proof of ownership? It's my little virtual badge. I saw the Spider-Man movie before any of y'all or whatever.
It would be like if, for example, on Steam, where you get like little wallpapers and emojis, trading cards, whatever the case may be. But each one of those were uniquely numbered and unique. You could then trade those and sell them. That's basically what this is. You get a free little image of something and you're going to try to sell it for money.
And this is the thing. And again, NFT folks, this is where my brain breaks down because I go, but the Steam marketplace, which has nothing to do with crypto, nothing to do with NFT. The Steam marketplace already has that, where you buy and sell the cards, buy and sell the emoji, crafting, all this. All of that is already built into Steam. It doesn't need an NFT. And I will understand, before, again, I hear people typing in chat already, I do understand that Steam is centralized, and maybe you don't like Valve, maybe you don't like banks or all that stuff, and then the NFTs and the crypto is all decentralized. It's the Swiss bank of all this stuff.
Yeah, that's worked out well for people too, with everybody getting ripped off for thousands or millions of dollars.
But
that sounds great.
But then my other thought is it really that outside when you have these big companies that are still getting involved? Like, you're sure, okay, you're doing the dealing in crypto, but it's like you're still passing the money through the NFT, the item through Ubisoft one way or another. It's are you really being that underground with it? I don't know. That's, I guess, what I don't get. So anyway.
Well, what we really should be looking at instead of NFTs, in Ubisoft games is why they haven't addressed the sexual harassment allegations that have gone on for their company for the longest time.
Great question.
And, because of that, they're also having surprisingly high turnover. You don't say, because they're saying that the pay isn't great, competitive opportunities are out there, and they're frustrated at the handling of these scandals and pushing NFTs instead. So
So Ubisoft's executives are telling the consumers what they want and not listening to what the market is saying, and they're losing employees and not able to keep the talent in-house. So honestly, all of the things that an executive is supposed to do, the executives are failing at. Is that correct at Ubisoft?
Yeah,
so
it sounds like
Yves Guillemot has a fucking job. Why? Because if I don't do my fucking job, I get let go. Why does Yves Guillemot have a fucking job? I don't understand this industry sometimes. I really don't. Fuck him. Fuck Bobby Kotick. Fuck a lot of these executives generally. I mean, some game companies are all right, but generally, fuck a lot of these executives. They're terrible. Anyway.
Yeah.
On that happy note, let's move on. Let's talk about the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters. A lot of them are already available, but people are waiting for the big one. I think 4 is kind of a big one, but 6 is really the one. Final Fantasy 6 Pixel Remaster. When is it coming out? And the answer is, it gets getting pushed back just a little bit. It was supposed to be out this year, but Square is going to be bumping it back to February 2022, and Square Enix is talking about that they need the extra time to apply the final... Oops, sorry guys, I hit the wrong button. We're not ready for that segment yet. Sorry, I meant to hit the down button. Mistakes happen live. That's why you tune in to hear all the mistakes. All right, so the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster again, Final Fantasy VI, delayed to February 2022. I mean, I guess Final Fantasy VI is a classic game, so maybe the music was appropriate, but it's not the selection for tonight. All right. Final Fantasy VI Pixel Remaster will be out on PC, Steam, iOS, and Android in February of 2022. If you've already pre-purchased the game, Square Enix is trying to, and notice that's pre-purchase, not pre-order. That's already paid full price for the game. You're going to get some extra soundtrack items, including time-lapse remixes of Locke's theme, The Decisive Battle, Terra's theme, Searching for Friends. A time-lapse remix is a soundtrack data that starts with the original version and blends into the alternative soundtrack version. And then, of course, two wallpapers, talking about things that are pretty easily...
I know, wallpapers.
Right? Yeah, it's kind of
maybe I'll get a screensaver with it, too.
Little flying toasters with Final Fantasy VI pictures on them. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, and when I heard that news, I was like, all right, that will probably, let's see, if that comes out in February, then that means E3 summer is about 4 months away. That should be enough time for them to announce that they're going to take the Pixel remasters and put them all out on consoles so we can finally have this on Switch, on PlayStation, on Xbox maybe, like, and all that good stuff, right? Right? Because that's what I'm waiting for. I hope so. All right. Moving on. Dark Sakura. An interesting one in the news. You're on mute. So Dark Sakura's
here. Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
So this, I don't want to tell it to anybody anyway. So it had been brought up before how you could play like video games on the touchscreen in a Tesla, right? Not anymore. At least while it's in motion, they are no longer going to allow video games to be played on the touchscreen when it's in motion. This is after a safety investigation happened. So basically they put out a statement saying that I'm just going to read the quote. Following the opening of a preliminary evaluation of Tesla's passenger play, they said in a new software update, it will now be locked and unusable when the vehicle is in motion. So it's been something available since December 2020. But as it is intended to be played by passengers, it hasn't always worked out that way. There have been drivers playing it. And so when you have people who are irresponsible, your toys get taken away. And honestly, it shouldn't have been in the fucking thing to begin with.
Well, and to be clear, there are games in the device that were always meant to be played like while the car is charging, while the car is parked, that sort of thing. Because, you know, when you drive a Tesla, you know, your gas stops, and I'm using my quotey fingers, often end up being a little longer. So the games is to like give you something to do, and there's like video apps too, like Disney Plus and stuff on the Tesla to help you pass the time when you're at these stops, getting the electricity. Because, and you might be wondering, like, why would I spend electricity? And some do, but it's fun to have it in the car too.
It's unnecessary.
I disagree, 100%. Like, especially
no, it actually is literally not a necessary thing to have in a car.
What's
necessary in a car is a speedometer. Is your accelerator, is the things that are used to control the car, air conditioner. Those are necessary.
Okay, well, my opinion is, and I'd like to state my opinion, is that there is a benefit to having these things in the vehicle for the charging amount of time. And the people that I've talked to, the Tesla owners, you know, when they're parked and stuff, it is a nice alternative because perhaps they want to have something that they and the passenger and the kids in the back seat can all participate in together, which you can't really do on a phone. So I don't think
I also agree that air conditioners aren't necessary either.
So this is
with Bobby.
Okay, well then when you purchase a cardboard box on wheels and that's your way to get around,
I have a 69 Mustang, Rob.
Is that the car you actively drive right now?
It was.
Okay. Anyway, so, but not in a long time. All right. So, anyway, my point is with this is that this is meant to be played when the cars are in park and all this stuff, and you're resting at the stop and all this stuff. For some reason, they got the bright idea like, oh, well, let's do this thing where the passengers can play the games. And there was only a few games. There's only like three of the games that people could play as a passenger. But as you mentioned, people couldn't follow the rules. You know, they just hit the button, you know, confirm you're a passenger. Yes, of course. Yes, of course. You know, and then they're playing the games and no shit. People got into trouble about that. That was a dumb, dumb idea to have some of the games in passenger mode. And I think there was a little bit of a standoff going on between the government and Tesla, because this didn't even happen until just a couple days ago. We're finally in this game of Texas Hold'em. Tesla folded and said, all right, never mind. We're going to turn it off because of, you know, what's going on, which, yes, I agree. Yes, is a good thing. But I don't see the harm in having it for its intended purpose of entertaining everybody in the vehicle. Everything I've talked to with Bobby, and I know other Tesla owners as well, the video game thing is a show off thing. It's like, look, I can play Sonic in the car. All right, that was fun. It's like running Doom on a toaster. You did it to say you did it, but you're not actually going to play all the way through Doom on a toaster unless you're that one person on the – there's always that one person on Reddit. I sped run Doom on a toaster. Great. Hooray for you. We're also thrilled for you. But for most people, it's not like something they take very seriously. So,
and to also tell Bobby, a radio doesn't fucking require that you look at it to interact with it.
All right.
A lot of radio controls are now built into the wheel.
Yeah.
It's absolutely there as a distraction. It is not a safety feature. It's an entertainment but item that can cause a real dangerous distraction to people.
All right. Let's move on to our next story and Loki.
All right. So it's just like, this is just the year that keeps on giving, but now GameStop is apparently letting you pay with crypto. Different crypto, I guess. So they're taking even some meme cryptos as well. So apparently they've joined with Flexa, which is a payment network that lets you use different currency, including Dogecoin. Yay! I have a use for Dogecoin now. I'm not sure what else they're going to, if they're taking like Shiba coin and stuff like that now. It looks like they're also doing Mana, Sand, and some other stuff. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what other cryptocurrencies they take, but I think it's just kind of a gimmick.
And it's all through this third party thing, right? So it's not like GameStop employees are actually having to necessarily learn about cryptocurrency outside of how to process a different type of payment in an app or something like that, right?
Yeah. So Doge, they're also taking Shiba coin, so they do take that. I am seeing that now. Bitcoin and Litecoin.
Hmm. So to be fair, so I talked, you know, kind of bleh on the NFT stuff earlier. Now let's say something positive about the whole crypto thing. This is the end game for that market, is the ability to use crypto to get goods and services, of which, say what you will about GameStop, they provide a goods and service that a lot of people are super into. So this is the end game for that. So it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to make a payment and those things. The thing is, those things are so volatile. That's like right now, like the amount of those things are so volatile. It's like gambling. It's like you perpetually have money in a slot machine. When you win, you win. Good for you. And that's, you know, you can turn that around and put it right back into GameStop or whatever it is. But I don't like to hold my money there right now. But if there was some stability and things like that, maybe I'd be more inclined to do it. I don't know. So, that's interesting. So I don't think I'll be making crypto payments to GameStop anytime soon, though. But neat, I guess, for those that maybe have a little bit more in their wallet. So, all right, moving on. Let's talk about, ooh, this is one of my favorite retro companies, and I know they're sitting on some good properties, and that is Sunsoft. And Sunsoft is looking at maybe doing more of their retro catalog as remakes. And of course, one of the big ones, one of the big ones,
Quest, baby.
I wish. I mean, there's a little more licensing that comes into that, but I also, Blaster Master's the big one. But yeah. Blaster Master Zero, hello, is already a thing, and they've actually done three of them. So they did that first one that was kind of a loose remake of the first game, and now it's spun off into its own trilogy. That, you know, obviously the second game doesn't, as far as I know, really tie to the Genesis one or anything that otherwise was in canon, but it kind of does its own thing, and it's done it well. Like it's a good trilogy, and in my opinion, Inti Creates kind of did a real bang up job with a retro property done right. I would love to see them take on others. Well, Sunsoft, on their Twitter account, Sunsoft Games, wrote a tweet this week that said, "Hope your holiday season is fun and festive. BTW." That's internet speak for "by the way." "We're thinking about remaking our retro titles in the near future. Could you tell us which ones you'd prefer? If you have any, shout us out on Twitter using Sunsoft Games. We'll refer to them. Thanks all." And of course, actually, I am curious, what kind of replies are they getting? Hold on, I want to read some of these replies here by going over to Twitter.
I don't really remember anything other than, like, they had, you know, Blaster Master. Was it, did they have a, God, what was that game? Never mind, I lost it.
Here's to help you remember, here's some of the replies they're getting. Journey to Silius is in the first reply, and I do remember, I think Dark Soccer may have highlighted that as a game of the week once, because that
I did for music.
That, oh, the music, that's right, because that was one that was like, it was supposed to be a Terminator game and didn't, like, that was the whole story behind that, right? I think so. That was a big one. They're mentioning 53 Stations of the Tokaido.
That's obscure.
Yeah. The Wing of Medulla, Hiberike. Let's see. I'm trying to see some more that they have here on the list. Somebody brought up that they did do the Batman, NES, and Famicom games. That is true. Obviously, the licensing would be a little harder now at this point. So there is that. Lots of people in the replies saying Hiberike, Gimmick, and so forth. But you're right. I have a hard time remembering what they had outside of Blaster Master that wasn't a more complicated license, like you say, the Fester's Quest and that whole sort of thing. So, and DJ Rama S kind of lights that up saying, ooh, Journey to Silius. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that would be very into that. So who knows? It could be something that gets approached later. All right. Sunsoft is taking all your ideas right now. All right. A couple more stories, then we'll get to the classic game of the week. But first, Dark Sakura.
There's another mini arcade machine coming out. It's the Taito Egret 2 mini. It's supposed to be coming out in 2022 with 40 different arcade games in it. I don't see what the list is. Arkanoid, Strike Bowling, Plump Pop. So yeah, there you go. If you like mini arcade cabinets, go get one.
I do love mini arcade cabinets. There's just so many of them now. It's hard to figure out which ones I want to get more than others. We just last week had that vertical Sega one that's on its way out too. So there's just a lot of good ones. So it's the time to be a collector. All right, Loki.
All right. So I don't know when we're going to have this. This has been one of those things we were talking about. When are we going to get a date for this? But apparently the Call of Duty studio that's which one. They're like all Call of Duty studios. Treyarch has vaguely promised to do better regarding all the sexual harassment, sexism, and bullying notices that have been going out about, you know, all sorts of areas in Activision. Our goal as a studio is to make awesome games for the world to enjoy, having the privilege to pursue, and that endeavor is made possible with because of Treyarch people. We are a studio comprised of smart, talented, world-class creative professionals, blah, 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 blah. Our culture has no room for sexism, harassment, racism, bigotry, discrimination, or bullying, but yet we find a way. As we move forward, I added that part. As we move forward, providing a safe, diverse, inclusive working environment so that many will thrive will be our highest priority. Cool. How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How about some details? How about some things besides words? How about some meaningful action? I think is a good way to put it.
Yeah. So we'll see. Promises.
Mm. All right. And our last story tonight is, this is kind of sad. It's, an arcade we've all here at OLR actually been to once. I know we went here once. Yeah. Seattle Gameworks is, going to be closing. And some folks, say, oh, this is, from The Last of Us 2 because, the arcade was actually in the fourth chapter of the game, you know, a likeness of it. But the actual arcade, and a lot of people know this arcade too, because it's across the street ish from the Washington Convention Center where PAX has been for forever. And that's how Loki Dark Soccer and I all went there once, because we all went to PAX together once in 2008, question mark?
Good times.
I think it was the year I had the surgeries and all that stuff. I was pretty sick, but was able to squeeze PAX in between that. Yeah, it was a great trip. And I think a lot of people know that GameWorks probably from going to PAX or something like that. And certainly if you look at like the music game roots and all that stuff of the show, you know, there was a big DDR scene there at one point. Maybe still to this day, as far as I know. I know they had like a pop of music there when I visited my most recent trip, which was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago at this point. But, you know, I know they still had some stuff. It's very reminiscent of like a Dave and Buster's or, you know, one of those large arcades. And obviously pandemic has probably made it a little bit harder to operate. That's certainly a part of it. Just the general decline of arcades in general. Tiger Claw is pointing out, too, Seattle Gameworks isn't the only one that's closing. So is the one in Las Vegas. And I had heard that possibly it's an issue with the entire chain. So there's that. Gameworks as a company is shuttering, according to this report. And, again, it's probably just a victim of the pandemic, which is sad. So, yep. Several tweets out there about this, how the word got out as some of the employees were kind of letting the news out and all that. They're trying to, this is interesting, is that one of the folks that was talking about the news online, who was, the composer from Get in the Car, Loser, Krista Lee, is saying that she's assisting the Video Game History Foundation in preserving what we can of the place. Well, that's kind of interesting to kind of work with the History Foundation and maybe get some of those machines. They're saying, too, that the Seattle location could be managed by the landlord if they were interested, but unknown if that would. I mean, that's a real prime piece of real estate right there. That is the heart of downtown Seattle. And I know what it's right across the street. If I remember right, like the convention center, the Hyatt is right there with the big Cheesecake Factory. Everybody at PAX probably eaten at once is right there. It's right in the heart of downtown Seattle. And it's going to be probably hard to keep a valuable piece of real estate like that. Especially if it wasn't making the money that it needed to stay open. So very, very sad. So, all right. Let's see. And She-Hulk 10 says, Alamo is closing as well. A great movie theater that shows cool independent movies and festive nights. Really? I didn't hear that. That's sad. That's unfortunate. All right. So goodbye to Seattle Gameworks and that large, large, real estate they were working with. There was a lot of crane machines in there too. I remember that. It kind of looked like a round one. There were so many. All right. Let's get into our next segment to remember fonder times at GameWorks or otherwise.
And
Now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And what did you pick here on episode 897, Dark Soccer, for the classic game?
I picked Brave Fencer Musashi, also Musashiden, which is the legend of Musashi. It's an action roleplay game that came out by Square in 1998 for PlayStation. I think the big thing with this is that I want to say that this was the same demo for Final Fantasy VII, if I recall correctly. It was kind of a thing with that. Yeah, this was like a on the same demo disc, if I'm right, or that a demo for Final Fantasy VII came with it. One way or another, they were related to each other. I'll have to look it back up again.
Yeah, it was 7 or 8, one of the two.
It was 7. No, it was 7. I know that. I just don't remember if 7 was the demo or if this was the demo.
Yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
At any rate, I want to say that 7 was the demo with this one, because there was some big thing about why everyone wanted it. But you play as Musashi, who is a swordman who is summoned to a parallel world to defend from the Thirst Quencher Empire. And he's searching for different scrolls that enhance his sword and interact with people in the world. And it was a big departure from Square's role-play games. It was a very positively received game. And he had like these different chain attacks that he could do with his katana that was called Fusion. And it was a pretty neat little game. You know, you could go in and sleep or go to an inn to recover your energy. Some very RPG like elements in it. But he's a reincarnation of the legendary Brave Fencer Musashi, and he goes, his reincarnated self goes back to save that world. It was developed in February 1997 by Sakaguchi Hironobu. There's a producer came up with the idea by having the real person, Miyamoto Musashi, to fight in an alternate world that he's actually came from. So that's kind of where it came about. And then there's also another character in there named Kojiro, who is based off of the swordsman Sasaki Kojiro. And for anyone who is a Pokemon fan, the original names of Jesse and James are Musashi and Kojiro. So just thought I would point that out. So the characters, you know, in the game have like that similar rivalry in it. The game, of course, the name of the game was changed to Brave Fencer Musashi instead of Brave Fencer : Musashiden, because people would. They feared that non-Japanese speakers would just say, "Oh, his name is Musashi." No, not really. It has 78 tracks on its soundtrack. Pretty impressive soundtrack. It was released in Japan on July 16th, 1998, and re-released June 20th, 2000 with Square's Millennium Collection. It also came with merchandise that included postcards, a combination camera and cell phone strap, a handy strap, and keychain fobs. And then it came out on PlayStation Network on July 9th, 2008. In the North American market, it was released October 31st, 1998. And yes, this had... Okay, so I was actually wrong on this. This had the demo of Final Fantasy VIII. Okay. I remembered, though...
Error is 8.
I thought that it was Final Fantasy VII, because I remember this game being older than it is.
Yeah, the VII had already been out, and it was... I remember it because I did get that game... Well, I got that... One of the reasons I got that was because of the demo, for sure.
Yeah. It did have a sequel, which was Musashi Samurai Legend. It came out for PS2, developed by Squenix, and was released in 2005. They also released a montage video that celebrated the game's 20th anniversary since release on July 16th, 2018. The game for Metacritic got an 81 out of 100. Famitsu gave it a 32 out of 40, which is a really good rating for Famitsu. It really got some really good reviews overall, and the game still remains a favorite for everybody, for a lot of people that played it. And if you haven't played it, why the fuck not?
Because I didn't know anyone who had it, and I didn't own it myself. I actually never played this.
It's a good game.
It looks cute.
Definitely checking out.
Yeah. It's definitely a PS1 era game, you know, from the graphics and all. But I noticed YYR kind of, I think it's YYR in chat, was saying kind of like, it's a special something from Square's PS1 era where they kind of did a lot of different things. And I can definitely see that in this.
I can tell you what game I think took some influence from this. Was, at least in, like, kind of what we're seeing in this particular area in the game. Maybe Klonoa took some influence from it.
Oh, maybe. I could see that.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, and honestly, for when this game came out, it did a lot.
Yeah.
Pretty advanced for its time.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it.
All right. There it is. Your classic game.
I don't know if this came out before Klonoa. I have to check that. Hold on. That's going to bug me until I look at it. Because
that's fine. We can watch a little more of the footage.
Klonoa came out in... Okay, so actually, yeah, Klonoa came out first. Okay, so that's right. So maybe this took influence from Klonoa then.
Possibly.
Klonoa came out in 87.
All right, there it is, your classic game of the week, Brave Fencer Musashi. Awesome. All right. I thought we'd check in with release dates around the world. I'm not sure if there is anything out this week, but I thought I would have us all look at the calendar anyway. So, Loki, do we have anything... in the U.S. releasing this week?
Nope.
Looking at Japan, I see some peripherals for the Switch, but I don't think I see any games this week. So it is a quiet week. What about the U.K., Dark Sakura?
No.
Yeah. There it is. The 1 week of the year, nothing's coming out. Everybody's taking a siesta. Next week, though, I'm sure that will change. Okay, here's an opportunity for the listener roundtable. If you'd like to give us a call, sure, we can take a call or two in our Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. If you'd like to join the green room is the place to be if you want to get in on the conversation. We also check our emails. I feel like we have another, this is like three dry weeks in a row, I think, but confirm.
I didn't even bring up the mailbag. Hold on.
I'm not sure I saw anything, but yeah, please double check because sometimes things come in like at the top of the show that I don't see. So
I'm logging in.
No worries. Again, participate at orangeloungetradio.com is the place to send an email if you would like to get in on the action. All right.
To quote the best line from Spaceballs, we ain't found shit.
That was Tim Russ that said that from Star Trek Voyager. Yep.
When they were combing the desert.
That's right.
Literally.
DJ Rama S says he's going to call in. So we'll just said that in our chat over at twitch.tv/Vognetwork. So we'll give him a moment. I will check in. I know this is, I'm going to say this as I'm half laughing. Do we have any last minute stories tonight?
Nope.
I had a feeling. We were kind of having to scrape what was available to us tonight on a slow week. Well, I do hope everybody's having a great holiday season. I hope you all have some good New Year's plans. I know with... The big old Omicron out there and all that stuff, some people are having to adjust appropriately, and I get it. It seems definitely frustrating. It's like 2 years in a row, but yeah, just be safe, y'all, this holiday season. I hope everybody has a good New Year's, no matter how you spend it. YYR was saying, I was thinking of emailing because Nintendo Minute was mentioned last week. I heard it ended because Nintendo was closing the site where those two folks worked and they were unwilling to relocate, but I decided it wasn't worth it. I thought they said in the press release those guys were being relocated. Or was that, or that they're being reallocated, maybe not necessarily relocated, just taking on different roles in the company. Yeah, that might also be a thing to save face. Bonds 006 says Epic Game Store has been giving away games every 12 hours. I think we kind of addressed that at the top of the show. I gave the PSA the Control is free right now. It's every 24 hours unless something changed in the you know, today or something, but I think it's just every 24 hours. Every 8 might be a little too often. We do have a call coming in, so let's get to it and say, hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
It's the one and only Ronma. How was everybody today?
Doing well. What a surprise. It's not like you said in chat or anything you were going to call in. But no, it's always a pleasure to hear from Ronma. Hi. Oh, your setup looks different. Are you somewhere else for the holiday?
Actually, I am home. I am not in front of my professional rig. I am at the other side of my quote-unquote studio apartment.
Got it.
on my laptop with my external camera.
Okay, camera space in a different way. All good. Well, what's on your mind tonight, buddy?
Well, I want to follow up with an article that you talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Which one?
Stadia.
Oh, sure.
All right, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to turn my webcam to my LG TV.
Okay.
And I'm going to turn it on, because after you talked about it on the show, I'm like, I got to try this and see if this works for myself.
So I'm going
to go ahead and turn everything on and get it up and running here, because I was playing around with it earlier to make sure I got it working, because it is finicky with controllers, but
sure.
I kind of got something going. So
okay,
let's bring the television up. Everything is set. Okay. I just turn on the Xbox, make sure that the TV and everything comes on, but here we go.
I'm going to do this for the Twitch folks to make it a little easier to see what you're doing there. Oh, of course, it's going to screw up my thing. Oh, sorry. You've seen a little of the magic there, but I'm actually going to make Rama's screen a little bit bigger there so you guys can actually see what's going on there.
There we go. Yeah.
So,
there I am, going to log in.
So for the sake of the podcast, folks, there's just a Stadia logo that we see kind of glowing and loading. So it just looks like the system is just going very slow there.
It's slow, but yet my TV is hardwired to the router that's sitting behind the TV.
Okay.
And as you can see, I kind of played around with it earlier with Dirt 5. So
good choice.
I signed up, did the 1 month free of Pro. So I'm like, let me go through all of these games and just try them out. So
yeah. Hey, I found Pro worth paying for.
Well, with all of the video games that I have bought, I'm not keeping Pro because I don't know how often I'm going to jump on here and play it. I just heard that as Rob said, it was free. I'm like, I got to try this out, load it onto my TV, and just see.
How does it run once you play a game?
Here's the thing. It's fast because I have gigabit internet, and my TV is hardwired to the router that's literally behind the TV. So
it really is when you're hardwired.
Yeah, and the thing is, I could have made it wireless, but I'm like, you know what? The router's right there, and I have extra cabling, so why not? So I'm just going to fire up a game real quick.
Okay. ZenMonkey in chat says, what is he doing? I'm lost. He's firing up Stadia on his LG TV, as we had an article a couple weeks ago that Stadia is now available for LG TVs. So Rama's kind of walking us through a little bit kind of what it looks like there. Mm-hmm. This is, again, integrated into the TV. He's not using some sort of like console or anything like that. And that's why the focus is getting a little screwy, is because he's pointed his laptop webcam at the screen. But again, our podcast listeners can't even see anything. But we'll just mention, it looks like he fired up Killer Queen Black, and it's just going through all the logos that you would see at the start of a game. It looks like it's still a little fuzzy, Rama. I don't know if you just want to wave your hand in front of the camera to get it to autofocus again.
This is why I don't trust Logitech equipment.
Yeah,
this camera
it's a lighting thing at this point. All right, that's all right. But we get the idea. Quick. I was just kind of curious like how smooth it is, you know, and that whole thing.
I would say it is, because I didn't feel any slowdowns when I was playing Dirt 5. So, I just fired up Killer Queen Black. It's just me. I have no clue what I am doing. So, I'm just sitting here just playing through this.
So
now,
you mentioned that the controller was kind of a pain to get set up. Can you mention like what the pain points were with that?
Well, as you know, basically, any controller works on any PC. You would think that any controller would work great on Stadia, through an appliance. You have to understand that LG uses what's called WebOS, and that's not really Android per se. It's its own little operating system. So what I did was I fired it up. I plugged in a wired Switch controller. I got nothing. So I had a special adapter that converts any controller to Xbox, and I tried that. Nothing. Tried a different USB port. Nada. Not nothing. That didn't work either. So I decided to break out my PlayStation 4 controller, plug it into the adapter. Nothing. And I'm looking at the instructions. I'm like, wait. It's supposed to work with Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS4, and certain Logitech controllers. So I took out the adapter, plugged in the PlayStation 4 controller directly, and it's working.
Well, glad you got it somehow.
Like I said, the load time on this was like pretty quick. So,
but it's just kind of getting to the Stadia menu that took a hot minute.
Kind of, sort of. Like if I turn on the TV and I hit the home button on the remote, there's an icon for Stadia right there. It takes like maybe less than two minutes for it to load up and get things up and running. So,
and when you're playing on a computer, it's going to be a little bit different since it's opening right up in Chrome. Right now, when I open my Chrome, it opens right to Dead by Daylight and launches the game. Because I never quit out of the game unless I'm going to play something else. So I haven't seen it work on a TV before because I've never played it on anything but on my Mac. Which, of course, it recognizes whatever I have plugged into my Mac at the time. I haven't tried my controller. I just found my my wired controller.
See, the thing is, I think it'll work for Mac because of direct input support. So as long as Stadia likes that, it's fine. I think because this is WebOS and the way it's coded, it's going to work on certain controllers. Because when I plugged in my controller or the adapter, it did say, you know, hid device detected. I'm like, okay, let's give it a shot. So, you know.
So, Rama, thank you for the walkthrough of Stadia on the TV. It's kind of nice to just be able to see that in motion. I do have another call waiting to get in, so I want to get that. But
sure, no
first,
problem.
Any other final thoughts for us before we get to that?
My Chinese food was bland for Christmas, so I'm not too thrilled about that.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Sorry to hear that. You have to have Dark Sakura send you some tarts. They were divine.
So. I have one left. They're mine.
Well, I'm not going to fight for a tart. Okay, No.
I'll pass you my tart. My tart recipe is easy. You buy puff pastry from the grocery store, and you buy marmalade from the grocery store, and you bake them.
It was good.
Sounds good. That'll give something Mako trying to do while we help her move next Sunday.
Oh boy!
Remember, friends help friends move. Real friends help friends move bodies.
What makes you think I haven't moved a body already?
All right, before we get terms of service violated, it's hyperbole. They are speaking in hyperbole. All right. That's going to do it, Rama. Thank you so much for the call. Right. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care, y'all, and Happy New Year.
Same to you. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We have another call waiting, so let's just bring him on in. Sorry the video is a little funky, but we'll fix it right now as we welcome another person. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this? Hi, you might be muted or we don't hear you. Wait, I thought I brought someone. Oh, they left right away. That's what happened. Let's try this again. I was like, why did the picture change? Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, it's Shane.
Hey, Shane, what's up?
I'm calling to complain because I don't have anything to complain to. No, it's actually, I think it's kind of an interesting thing.
Okay. It's not about me. Oh, finally, what a change.
We'll wait for the show on Wednesday for that. No, so this is about our favorite company, Konami, actually.
Oh, no. What is there to complain about there?
It's worse than I was expecting. Let's just say that. So my local arcade got a 2DX machine. I'm super excited about that. Started playing it, kind of rekindled my love for 2DX. Saw my cousin playing 2DX Infinitus, which is the computer version. Yeah. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. Okay,
I have the PC one. Yeah, we've gotten emails on it before. I haven't played it myself, but I'm familiar that, you know, Konami's tried to launch. Like, they just recently did DDR. We've heard a lot about. They have like an online DDR one. Yeah.
Yeah, they also have Sound Voltex. But we'll stick to 2DX for a moment here. Mm-hmm. So I was like getting really interested. So one of the things we did for Christmas is we ordered me a fancy 2DX controller, not very cheap to begin with, but it was like, cool, I'll have a controller, can play 2DX on my computer. Infinitus is about $15 a month, which, well, it's just another subscription service, whatever. But the problem is, I didn't know that they sell ridiculously overpriced song packs, and there's about 20 of them. And that's where the bulk of the music content comes from. And each song pack, 25 songs roughly, $60 each.
Wow. Wowie.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just wanted to call and complain about that and just say how ridiculous it is to charge $15 a month on top of wanting $60 for each of these song packs, which I'm sure they're not anywhere near like finished doing. They're only up to, I think, maybe Heroic Verse songs in Infinitus. So we're already past that mix. So
interesting. Yeah. And I've heard this before. Well, isn't there a way as well? Cause I thought this was a thing that I remember going, the fuck, like a way that you can play any song basically like for $1, you get a 4-song game just like you were playing an actual arcade machine, but that's on top of your $15 a month. Isn't
I haven't seen.
Maybe that's in the DDR game.
It might be in the DDR game, but what I do know about Infinitus, besides these song packs, is they do have unlockables, but apparently they're incredibly grindy to get just like even basic difficulties for each of these older songs. And they sell like boosters to boost how many like unlockable points you get for like 12 hours.
And Orange Rite and YYR are both confirming DDR Grand Prix does do that, but not 2DX. So that's why my brain was getting crossed. Yeah.
Okay. But I think it's such a bummer because this is an amazing way to be able to play like some cool stuff at home, but they have to go and Konami it. And it's just such a bummer.
They have to go and Konami it. That is quite the phrase. Do you think that maybe that's why they haven't really pushed this in the U.S.? You know, this is not something that we really see marketed in the U.S. like at all. This is really something that's do you think maybe the Japan culture is just more willing to pony up the money for this? Or just, you know, maybe the way the games are piecemealed over there with online services, they're willing to do it. Whereas, you know, they know that if this was a bigger deal in the U.S., this stuff would probably get called out.
Maybe so. And I think it's also weird that I believe out of the three online PC titles, the DDR, Sound Voltex, and 2DX, it's the only one that does not actually grant you any benefits in the arcade if you link you have to link an EMUs account. But I think Sound Voltex and DDR actually give you some sort of benefit, whereas this is like, give us a lot of money and a lot of your time to grind stuff, but that's it. We just want that. Don't worry about the arcade.
I think there's just so many of us out there that just wish Konami would be bought by somebody who could better handle all the intellectual properties. But then at the same token, it's like Konami's not going to be for sale as long as they're making oodles and oodles off slot machines and pachinko and all that stuff, which still is doing very well. And
now their online services.
let's see. And YYR points out DDR gives you nothing in the arcade at present. So it's not just something unique to DDX.
Sound Voltex then. Okay. But I'm still gonna go all in, or not all in on this, but I mean, I got my controller coming at some point, so
you're like, all right, maybe I'll do $60 this month, $60 in a couple months, and build my collection slowly.
I'll just grind out the unlock points and get Lion Ski and then just play that, and that's all I need, I guess.
Just play the, because that's the sign of a true Bomani addict, is that there's the one song that you had to import a Japanese PlayStation 2 and copy of Beat Mania 2DX and 2DX controller so you could play the one song.
Yeah.
It happened to all of us.
Last time I was at the arcade, I only get two songs per game. And they were both Lion Ski. I was like, I got to let the entire arcade know how good Carlos is. So
Well, it is arguably one of the best songs in the entire series.
Oh, definitely. And I guess Infinitus has, it's not a Kiriyamaoka, but they do have a sequel to right Lion's Speed with a puppet and everything.
It's right next to the original of The Safari.
Oh, The Safari is so good.
The original of The Safari, not the sped up one.
Yeah, no, I don't count that one. I didn't even remember it until you said that. So
I'm sorry for bringing that little unfortunate piece back to light.
That's okay. I'll forget about it when I take my Ambien. So it's all good.
Well, Shane, consider your complaint officially lodged, but as it is a complaint about Konami, it has been classified as redundant. So there you go.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm not going to get any like email back.
Nope.
Saying like, thanks for your comment. Nope. Here's a $2 coupon or something.
Shane, you used to work there. You know how they work. And it's worse right. than when you work there.
I know. How is it worse than getting drunk at lunch and coming back to work? I don't understand.
I don't know how many of those stories you should be telling on this program.
Whatever. It only happened like twice.
All right. On that note, we're going to let you go. Thanks for the call, Shane. I appreciate you.
No problem.
All right. Bye. Even when you call to complain. All right. At least this one wasn't about me. I think with that, we are going to probably start to wrap up the show here for the night. Thank you guys so much for checking out our show tonight. Thank you for being here. Again, I encourage emails and things of that sort. Participate at orangeloungetrader.com. You can tweet us as well. I do respond to tweets, even though I don't always remember to read them here on the show. Twitter.com/OLR. Thanks again for downloading our show. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange or watching us live, if you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, help us spread the word, tell a friend, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices here with us on Sunday nights and throughout the week on Twitter and email and all the other ways the podcasters, folks, interact with us. We need more folks to, really get more voices here at the table and tell us about some of these, cool things we might not otherwise cross our desks because we're too busy playing other games. Also, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Spotify just unleashed reviews. So a nice 5-star review on Spotify goes a long way. So please consider that. You don't use Spotify? Well, a nice review or a social media share of whatever you are using does go an awful long way. So please consider that as well. Thanks again. The Discord, if you want to join us through for conversation throughout the week, vognetwork.com/Discord if you want to join the Discord server. So there you go. I think the time has come to go around and get everybody's final thoughts and wrap it up. I hope everybody has a great holiday, and we'll see you again in 2022. It's going to be our 20th year of broadcasting. This show started in June of, I almost said 1992, but that would actually be 30 years if that was the case. And I think we would have all been in like high schoolish. We will see you. We started in 2002. We'll see you for our 20th broadcast year 2022 next week. Until then, let's get some final thoughts. Dark Soccer, your final thought tonight. Once again, you're muted.
I don't have any. Okay. I want my soup. I want to kill people and burn off my upsetness.
All right. Well,
I'm going to just smack survivors around and feel better about the universe and my place in it. I'm going to run Noed on every build and see how much salt I get.
All right. Darsec will be doing that live for those folks on Twitch in just a moment once we wrap it all up here. So have a good killing spree, Dark Sakura.
Later, Tater.
All right. Loki, we'll go to you. Your final thought tonight.
The final thought is I got to put together my episode for this week. I've been doing too much, but I think I've done enough now where I can kind of coast on the next couple episodes after this.
All right. Well, best of luck with all of that.
Yep.
My final thought is I hope to see you guys on Wednesday for the Final Fantasy XIV spoiler stream. But I understand you might not want to have everything spoiled yet. So if you decide to wait and watch it later, hey, that is fine too. We will have it in the VOG Network archives for our subscribers to be able to access whenever they want. Otherwise, that's it. I hope, again, y'all have a safe New Year celebration, whatever you're doing. If you're doing something small at home, or if you're doing like a party with friends that are all like boosted and masked up and all that stuff, then I hope everything goes very well for you guys. That's really it. Happy gaming, everybody. We'll be back next week. We'll probably do some talk about games of the year. I don't know if I have three games of the year for the list. We'll see. We'll talk about that next week and how we want to do all that. And maybe some predictions for 2022, because I think we skipped them this year. We'll blame the pandemic for that and my aloofness. But we'll do some predictions for 2022. So stay tuned next week. We'll see you guys then. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.